go ahead and call the meeting to order and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the accounts payable, and that will be accounts payable cycle date 8-5 through 8-9, in the amount of $518,690.17, noting that the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Items of note?
Only that all the items are related to payroll.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other discussion?
To payroll.
Aren't they all related to payroll?
No, none of them are payroll.
Well, they're distributions for payroll-related deductions.
Oh, okay. Okay. So Department of Revenue, Secretary of State. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Town of Hayden, City of Steamboat Springs, Town of Yampa.
Those are distributions of the clerk's office. Motor vehicle.
So it seems like there should have been two different line items for that.
You would have thought, no, they're all from
their work. That's just called distribution, so.
I'll look and see what the others are.
Got in trouble, having quiet time. Well, you don't have to be quiet. You're fine.
Are we looking at the same payroll, same thing sheet?
I'm pulling up the sheet that I approved last week. Just take me a few minutes.
I don't have anywhere to be.
I'm all right. What's every other month is good.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't change all that much.
It does not. That's the depressing part.
Ironically.
Actually, this one you sent us online is working pretty good.
So. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Finally.
That's all right. Yeah, we didn't have 780 pages of BOE.
I know.
Good.
That was good.
200. There has been additions, though. DHS added her update to there.
Yeah, that's new.
So
she emailed it to us.
The approval of the accounts payable for right now.
We may have the opportunity later in the meeting.
I'll withdraw and then we'll.
So we'll just
I'll
table it temporarily.
And then I move to table.
Oh, okay.
It's all in
second.
One swift motion.
All right.
There.
Any discussion on tabling it? And we'll just table it until Tom has had an opportunity to review it.
Yeah, till later in the agenda.
Later in the day today. You have to second his to
I did.
You did? Okay, great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, so work session yesterday, we had updates from the county manager, from legal, from the deputy county manager, the IT department, the building department, the planning department, the environmental health department, and we reviewed the GFOA draft report.
Great. Madam Chair, I'd like to pull consent agenda item A. And in the meantime, I would move to approve consent agenda items B, C, D, E, F, and G.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 So, Madam Chair, on a consent agenda item A, I guess we will not be approving the minutes from July 9th. Is that correct?
Yes, we'll Deanna? Table the July 9th
we'll table,
minutes.
We'll table those
until next
minutes.
Week.
In the meantime, I would move to approve the minutes from July 2nd of 2019.
So the motion is to approve the minutes from July 2nd and table the minutes from July 9th until next week.
Correct.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Deanna, I have a question. How are you today?
Good. John Holloway with the Elevation Law Group, and I'm also here on behalf of Pleasant Valley Management, which manages the agricultural properties at Lake Catamount. And I'm here also on behalf of the Catamount Metro District, of which I'm the president. My request is directed to you because I've been told by Mike Morty that we can't have a permit to access for agricultural operations on lots 20 or 39, these two right here. Lot 37 and 38. There's hay meadows here and here, and we'd like to have access off of County Road 18. Just ag access is all. We're just looking for a culvert and some dirt to be able to get into these two fields. Right now, how we go through there is we come all the way down here through the residential neighborhood, across up here, and we cross right here. The parties that own this property have asked us to move the access. We would like to have ag accesses here and here independent of one another. We usually do both of these off of the same one.
You want two separate?
Two separate ones.
And why? Why two?
We tried.
Is there a ditch there? Is a creek there? Or what is that?
Yeah,
is that a
there's
creek?
There's a drainage that goes basically like that. We can't get across it.
So. Okay.
And that request has been submitted to Mike Morty and denied? Is
yes.
That, do I understand you
yes.
Correctly? Okay.
Based on our road and bridge policies?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So
and what's the reason? What does that policy say? Why?
One access per lot. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly.
Yep.
And there's not two lots there?
There are two lots, but all of these lots
access
through the metro district, roads, etc. It's just a lot of, we have to drive all that equipment through all these residential neighborhoods. These are all fully developed.
God forbid we'd hate to have them guys have, say, look at some hay equipment running through their front yard. So,
yeah.
We're all good.
Yeah.
I won't be snide. I may be.
So just to be clear, the access that you currently, which two lots are we talking about?
These two lots right here. And where we access right now is across this, which until very recently we didn't even realize that this was part of the, this little triangle was part of one of these two lots. We'd always thought it was one or the other.
As far as this lot is concerned, you don't actually have an access to this lot right now.
Well,
they
through,
have
through
access,
the property
it's
this guy's
here.
Owns.
Yeah.
They just don't have their
own access
directly
right
off.
Right there. Exactly.
It's not directly off the road.
Exactly.
Off of 18.
Yeah, off of 18.
And you don't want to abandon those accesses, I take it.
That would be exactly true, yeah. These are, this really came about because...
So what do you mean abandon?
Well, I mean, if they abandon these accesses...
No, those are going to continue being used for residential access. They want access back onto County Road 18.
I understand.
And not go through the subdivision.
Exactly.
I think it's
the point I was saying is that if these ones went away, then we could grant these.
Well, I don't think we really have a policy as such.
That's
one
right.
Lot, one access per lot. No, I don't think so.
You know,
I'm pretty certain of it. It's a,
this
it's
is
a practice.
Of, it's I, this is a new one on me. This
so
me.
So again so so you know I again a couple of principles here. I mean, we want to support the continued ag there, and we want to support getting, you know, and I appreciate not wanting to drag my 30-foot trailer through. It's got 20 bales on it, or 40-foot trailer on it. It's got 20 bales on it, driving through the residential area. So, you know, and again, so I, and you know, we whether we set some precedent here or a variance or whatever, and it's a seasonal access versus a full year-round access as well, and would be used during hay and season or agriculture season, and not necessarily a full-blown access too. I'm a little torn because, you know, hell, me, I'd probably just driven over the ditch and gone through there, but you know, so so. But anyhow, I guess we need to figure out a process that we're going to go through to be able to allow. And we don't need to stick Morty and Ray out there, you know, and we come up with some type of policy, and especially if it's a temporary and it's a temporary ag, you know, and something like that, you know, versus having what we're trying to get away from is having two accesses and have multiple accesses onto the same piece of property. And
that's do these lots currently have houses on them?
Yes, they all do, and that's kind of what precipitated this.
Including these just, two?
Yep.
Okay.
They just paved their driveway, and the driveway is really narrow, and he said, I'm going to tear Don Bongiorno does the Hain for us and has for the last 20 years, and he said, I'm just going to tear that all up. So that's when we got surveyors out there and said, we're not even on either one of these two lots.
I think that since we're in public comment and this has already gone through staff, probably the appropriate thing would be for us to discuss with staff.
Yeah.
Rather than try to make any commitments to you today, obviously.
No, that's okay.
Yeah,
and,
I don't. Do you guys have other questions?
We got a notice from Mike 2 weeks ago that John was going to be coming in, and he had a conversation with Mike.
So we can have some more conversation and, you know, just make sure we understand the situation and that we're in agreement with the staff decision or not.
And or create some type of policy, because this isn't the first place this is going to show up for temporary ag access onto the county road that might, you know, and if we're going to support, and again, I'll throw my ag hat on here, if we're going to support ag, that means you need to be able to support having getting products in and off of the county road and the rest, and without tearing up the county road.
And have some kind of assurance that that's all it'll be used for.
Exactly, yeah. So it's not a secondary access that it's going to be left open, and we do a roundabout through the property. So I guess best...
We'll have to have discussions with Road and Bridge or with Public Works.
So we can provide
what can be done.
Staff direction to Tom to have him come up with some
noted
discussion. Yeah, that'd
Perfect.
Be good.
Thank you for your time.
So just to make sure that it is, you're correct, it is strictly for agricultural, it's seasonal, and we'll pay for everything as far as culverts, etc. That ditch is just too steep. I mean, had we had a mellow ditch in there, we would have just driven across.
Yeah, no, I understand.
We've done a bunch of fencing work out here this past spring, and so we've kind of opened up the area for some good access points off the county road, and we would build that and design it, etc. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the only thing I had to ask is timing-wise. We've got a couple of contractors that are interested in getting the work done this fall. Is there any way I can help to get that done by this fall?
Well, I don't think we're making any guarantees that anything's going to be gotten
right,
done.
Good, that
so, but we can make sure that
I'll get in touch with Mike. As
have
it
in, have that conversation okay. in a timely manner. So we can
I
get
told
back
him
to
I was
you.
Going to come talk to you guys. So.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, John. He gave very us good. A heads up. Yep.
Beautiful. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. You guys have a nice afternoon.
You too.
Nice quiet morning.
So let me have the sheet back again.
We're going to go back to our agenda item regarding the approval of accounts payable.
So, Madam Chair, I would move that we approve accounts payable cycled 885 through 89 in the amount of $518,690.17. The county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Yeah. Tom?
All of the payments are from the county clerk's office. And motor vehicles, some of them are to the Department of Revenue. If you've noticed on there, the other ones are to the towns of Hayden, Oak Creek, Steamboat Springs, and Yappa. And these are distributions of motor vehicle collections.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, you guys can come on up.
Yep, please.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming.
Good to see everybody.
Good morning.
You too.
Morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good
Young
see you
professional of the year, Cole Hewitt.
Oh, really? Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that. With friends like these, who needs anything?
I told Will, and he was like, Cole's going to hate that.
Yeah. I had to write a sentence today to my boss saying we had to reschedule a meeting because I need headshots. And I was like, this sucks. This sucks.
But thank that's you. PJ, right? And
yeah.
He nominated you.
Yeah.
So
he's,
yeah.
He came out about that.
Will also said that you nominate someone every year so that you don't have to win.
Yes. Correct.
Strategy.
That's how it works.
That's how it
works. It didn't pan out.
It did not work this year.
Well, it's the last time you'll win.
It is
so.
Literally the last time. I just needed one more year and I don't think I was eligible. It's pretty eligible.
You need to flex the rules.
At some point, it'd be great to catch it up.
All right. Well, will you all just introduce yourselves for the record, and then you can give us your update.
Kara Stoller, CEO of the Steamboat Springs Chamber.
John Bristol, Economic Development.
Cole Hewitt, President, Economic Development Council.
Thanks. Thanks for coming today. So, yep. This is your second quarter update for us. Perfect.
Quarterly.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Quarterly. Sorry. Not. It, well, it says second quarter.
Second quarter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. So I thought I'd start with these two items, which I brought.
Yeah, I love these.
So this got a good reaction from the Economic Development Council. So University of Colorado was cleaning out their library, and they had all these economic development plans. Which we know sit on shelves.
They're in beautiful shape. Nobody's ever opened them. They're not
So there were some pretty good ones. I wanted to quote one from, 1945.
Wow.
Here we go.
Is this specific to Rock County or just
state? That's right, specific to Rock County. So for the possibility of losing farmers and coal miners, attention should be given to maintaining these industries and developing additional ones. If the irrigation project is successful, that will certainly help. If a coal plant can be built to process the coal of Rock County, the mine production and employment may be maintained or possibly increased. And let's see. Without this, the decline of coal mining must be anticipated due to the declining demand for coal as a solid fuel. And one last one I thought here was interesting. The tourist trade may offer additional possibilities for business expansion in the county.
Who knew?
The action taken by the community during the recent years in developing the winter sports facility, including a ski tow, will help to extend the length of the tourist season. If there's a possible transform overnight tourists into an extended stay visitor by improving the recreational facilities of the region, other gains in general business would probably result.
They knew their stuff.
These are actually the minutes from our last EDC meeting. Right?
So that's pretty awesome.
Right.
That was pretty awesome.
So I've had,
I've had fun flipping through some of these. So, and this is another one on economic development strategy. You know, it's really for me, it's a reminder that, you know,
some things change, some don't.
Some don't, some change. Do. And, you know, oftentimes we're just holding the baton for what's happening and trying to kind of sort of direct things a certain way. But I think through some of that, it's interesting to see how successful community leaders have been in the past and how we need to keep a lot of the economic development working in mind as well. So there's opportunity there. So, and some of those obviously sit on a shelf. So we have to be thoughtful on where we can be really targeted and not.
Are we the official new owners of these?
We are the official new owners. There was actually a document that I had to sign and send back.
Oh, well.
So to say that I took
it. Are you going to create a lending library in your office? Yeah. For
you'll have to have a archive given to the library. Yeah. I mean, not the library.
Look at the plan here for connecting to the rest of the country. It's pretty.
Wow.
This is interesting, right? So there's some, you know, just talking there about strategies of developing the infrastructure, developing the airport, developing the highways, all of that. So I thought that was really interesting. A good reminder for us.
Local leaders are working with the FAA and leading air carriers to establish year-round jet service at the Yappa Valley Regional Airport.
Still doing that.
1990.
Still working on that.
Very nice. So,
pretty cool. Yeah. So if you want to read any of those, and bust them off.
It's funny because that's like a double-edged sword. I mean, on the one hand, some of the stuff was really prescient and you know, came to fruition, and it also sounds a lot like what we keep talking about here years later. So. Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
The
same issues are still
percolating. So
talked about for decades.
And I think what's interesting about those, right, is how do you organize and have those civic institutions where people are bought into that and bought into plans, right? That's one of the problems when you do have economic development plans is not everybody's involved, or maybe you don't have some civic institutions like the EDC and others where everybody's bought in, you know, which I think is probably one of our best successes over the last couple of years is with the EDC and others and kind of gaining that insight and support for economic development and clarity of what exactly it could be. So on the front page of that memo that I've got, I haven't changed this. It's the same thing. I talk about it each time. It's those 10 steps of what economic development is. And obviously it starts with investors and time and administrative stuff, but it's the Economic Development Council and there are three subcommittees, which Cole is leading to good success with over the last 2 years. Appreciate it. Our strategic partners, activities, programs, policies, and what's most important is quality of life and economic well-being for the community. So that reflects how this is organized, this update, as you read through it. You can see for the investors, updates that we have, submitting budget requests, doing the same thing with the city as well as monthly meetings with the city manager for Steamboat and obviously with the chamber as well for this three-way partnership that exists here. Staff time, administrative, economic development council, let's jump down to that. Since the last time we got together, we've had several good presentations. Public policy committee, we've had a presentation on developing economic development metrics specific for the EDC and what that looks like, because that informs my work and how you know, what's important and how we're tracking that. So we've actually got a working group organized that's diving into some of the work. So I'll talk about that here in a little bit. Presentation, Todd Carr came to EDC, talked about regional building department, had a presentation on Peabody and Arch Coal, and then last month, public safety over the new Clef building, which was really cool. So this month we'll talk about housing and retreat, and at that point we'll have a change in leadership with our chairs. I did want to take a moment and highlight the EDC's subcommittees. I'm really proud of the work that they're doing. Megan Moore Kemp is the EDC's vice chair as well as the chair for the Business Development Committee. She's really brought that committee together and been pushing their activity. And this is really important for me because I can't cover everything, and they give me strategic guidance in the work that we do. I really appreciate the work she's been doing. Obviously, that starts with our business retention and expansion program, which has been developed. It's Q3 and Q4. Big push to get out and talk to our primary employers, run through our business retention and expansion survey, which this committee developed, and ask those key questions that we need to be having with our businesses. You know, identify any red flags that they potentially have, and really understand where they are, how they're operating. Second to that is the development of our industry cluster program. Admittedly, this is a little bit slower than I had anticipated. I hope we'd get through all three of these sectors this year. I think that we're looking at getting through ag and outdoor products. And next year we may have to hold over the creative industries and location neutral strategies. But that's based off of just being really smart and targeting key sectors for growth, those that align with our community assets and where there's the potential for job growth at average annual wages or above, which for us is $43,000. So that's where you really want to target and put energy versus maybe other sectors or other that are producing jobs at a lower average annual wage. So this work, typically, I've got a good strategy document from San Luis Obispo County in California, and it was an effort that they did for brought in a consultant, $120,000, and went through all of that process, which is really good, but we're doing it through the committee, and it's part of this process of ensuring that everybody's bought into it and has, kind of sees their point of view in it. So we've been working through that, and it's kind of slow, but we're doing it. So I'm really happy about that and proud of the work that Megan's doing in that committee. Thank Commissioner Melton for serving on that as well.
So, can I interrupt you just a second?
Absolutely.
So did you say you were through? Oh, you were in progress. So you know, I'm sorry.
Not finished. Yeah,
there's nothing to actually show us at this time.
No.
Okay.
Got some drafts, which you can look at if you're interested.
No, that's all right. But happy to wait for the finished product.
Right.
So and I think that'll be more fun. Nathan Fay was out.
Yeah. And so at the same time as was, I think it's really important to, we need to develop these because that's key. As we know, funders, they want to see some documentation of what are your plans and where you're going, who's bought into all of this. And so there's the track of developing it, but also already implementing what we're doing. So working with, the Outdoor Recreation Office, the Governor's Outdoor Recreation Office, we had scares and Kate Fay came up last month, it was 3 weeks ago now. We did a nice outdoor rec roundtable, and that's part of the industry cluster strategy, is you really need to pull together folks, get them to work together, and have some of these conversations of how can we work together and coordinate. The outdoor gear manufacturers, really, that's where we're focused. They know each other, they see each other out and about, but they don't necessarily sit down and talk about their issues that they're having, together. Where if they did, there would be some opportunities to work together, be it recruiting talent or finding space or whatever it may be. So, but trying to facilitate that forum where they're able to come together and talk. And for us to be able to identify some of those key needs that they have could help us lower some of the barriers for them. So that's to stay and grow here. So that's kind of what's getting at. Jump down, Education Communications Committee, ongoing work there, Economic Summit. It's coming up this fall, Friday, October 19th. Start local and grow local. That theme of start here, stay here. Public Policy Committee has done some really great work over the last month. Cole serves on that. It's really been influencing the work they've been doing. And then also I mentioned this ad hoc metrics task force that I've got going to work on that. So which really came out of my desire. The challenge, as we know, a challenge with economic development, since it's a long-term effort. We see this in these reports. It's constantly ongoing. So how do you track that? You know, that's a tough question, right? I mean, it's how do you, you know, if you have a retirement portfolio, are you looking at it every quarter and what's the change and what's that look like? Or do you look at it every year or every 5 years and what that changes? And so long-term planning is critical, and I think that identifying key metrics is really important for us. International Economic Development Council conducted a best practices report and really put together a menu of different economic development metrics that are out there specific to EDOs, economic development organizations. And so this working group that we've got together, and Dan Weinheimer is going to serve on it as well, to really identify what are the key metrics we want to use. So we've got a menu of options that we're going to run through. And I'm not talking about economic statistics. I'm talking about specific to economic development organizations. So some creative data in there that we can use.
Is the Economic Summit actually on a Saturday?
No, it's not. It's Friday 18th.
Yeah. Sunday.
Friday the 18th. Okay. Is that right? I said the 19th, didn't I?
Just trying to put it on my calendar.
Thank you. Let's see. Strategic partners, usual work. We talked about core reliant communities. The US EDA is having their economic development conference the end of this month in Denver. I'll attend that. That's folks from across the economic development region 5, Intermountain West, essentially. We had meetings with new executive director Betsy Markey at the State Office of Economic Development, International Trade, and others. There's been some changeover, obviously, with the new administration. So just building ties with them for over the next 4 years and trying to maintain and build those relationships, which is really important for us. The blueprint program has been changed to Rural Technical Assistance Program, just renaming stuff, which happens with changes in administration. Town of Hayden applied for the Certified Small Business Community Program, which we supported, and they got it. So they're working through that process, which is really happy to see there. Usual work with AG&C, pop in to attend their meetings when I get an opportunity. Try and specifically the ones that are closer, they don't have to spend too much on my life. Makes it a lot easier in time. Northwest COG, they have their... they have a meeting this Economic Development District meeting this next week. You know, we're in the AG&C Economic Development District, but City of Steamboat participates with Northwest COG, so end up having a split time on both of those. We'll note with Northwest Colorado Council of Government, we are in the area for the Northwest Colorado Revolving Loan Fund, which is Anita Cameron. Made 6 referrals to her. That's a really important program for us. I think she'll be coming in to talk to you all
What's her name?
Anita Cameron. So when we're talking to businesses that are looking for technical or financial assistance, this loan fund is really important for us for referrals.
So we always see these guys when they want us to allocate the money.
And what's the success stories, right?
Exactly, yeah. Totally.
Exactly.
So it's really nice to see something, hey, well, this actually worked, and this is what happened. So,
and that is the message. No. Complain to me, because that's the message I carry when I see it.
Exactly, please do. Yeah. Well, you know, it's great to come ask us, and we want it to be spent here locally and for doing projects on our turf, but... same point in time, it'd be nice to...
the communication, closing the loop on what, you know, what's outcomes, what's the results here.
Yep.
And that's spot on, and that's a message that I've... thank you for mentioning that, because that's a message I've carried.
But I mean,
to them.
She has been over in the past. I'm not sure how recently it was.
Mm-hmm. Last time she needed money.
And while she advised of some of the business participants in Round County.
Yeah. She is... I know that she's been working with the referrals that I've made, but she's also working with others. I've asked her to just close that communication. Keep me posted on what are you doing in Route County. I will say 2 successes I know off to the top of my head, including Smell That Bread. That's been public sources. It's in the newspaper. There is also a business located in Hayden that works in the service sector doing linens that they've provided some service to. Well, and I think that'll be an
interesting... And that's what I remember.
Yeah, and that I think will be an interesting story that I've...
That's the one we encourage didn't get that many happen.
Encourage her to talk about when she comes in. So I'm hopeful that she'll be able to
you
discuss
them in
that
Yampa?
Publicly.
I had a particular building in mind for them.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay. Did someone in your family own that building?
Yeah. I should disclose that. Yes.
But feedback. Closing out.
Communication.
And again, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And I've heard that and hit back on that. Communicate that as well. So, because sometimes I find out after the fact, I'm like, hey, let me in on this stuff. So, Economic Development Council, I sent out an invitation if any of you are able to attend. It will be their annual conferences down in Colorado Springs in October. Let's see what else. Fairs. We'll say, Craig Moffitt Economic Development Council. They just dissolved their economic development group over there several months ago. Though they're starting to reorganize at the city level. And Craig, I attended their one of their organizing meetings a couple weeks ago, along with Randy Rudacious. It was great just to meet them, see who's working on that. My sense was that there wasn't a whole lot of interaction at the county level there. It was largely a City of Craig effort.
So what's Jennifer Holloway's position?
Chamber.
Oh, okay.
But there was a... She's also did you see the article in the Craig Daily Press about what the commissioners did last week?
No. What did they say?
I don't remember. They put together some kind of a business relocation document.
Oh, okay.
Or something. I mean, not that it's a... I don't think it's a grant fund. I think it's just like, here are all the incentives that are available to move here. Like, it was more of a informational piece.
We've got the enterprise on. We've got real jumpstart.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, informational.
I'll send it to you.
So I'm trying to keep track of that. So it's important that we have a strong partner over there, and so I think they're getting organized. Quick update on SmartWool activity. We'll need to schedule a follow-up meeting, REACT Act meeting with DOLA between the county and the city and us, just an update and talk through where we've gone, what's been covered, and what is left to be covered. We did 2 weeks ago, or last week, it was last Tuesday, held organized an employee resource session for the SmartWool employees. There's about 15 employees that are still looking for new positions, and it's really important that we're able to retain that talent here. Yeah, we want to keep them here locally. So trying to serve as a bit of a matchmaker to keep them here. There was an additional 15 or so that have already transitioned and found employment, and then the remainder of those, the balance, are moving to Denver. So there are a couple that are trying to work remotely. So.
And a lot of those who are staying, who we spoke to last week, are trying to start a new business, either with others who are staying, other SmartWool employees that are staying, or on their own, consulting, starting their own business, and also possibly entering into new apparel or manufacturing. And I don't know what their termination clauses are include, but... It was a great opportunity for us to help them and share all the resources that are available in the community.
So, I mean, how helpful has the state actually been?
That was kind of my thought.
That's a good question. I'll give them a B+.
Really? That high of a grade?
Yeah.
And so, could you describe the kind of assistance that they're providing?
Sure. I think that they're... willingness to attend with forums, the willingness to move on Rural Jumpstart, that was a pretty heavy lift for them to take on. We do have a company that's been accepted into that program and utilizing it. I think that's important. I think that some of the awards through DOLA for the Ready Grant and others is helpful.
Okay.
Main Street.
The whole awesome. them.
Yeah, across between OEdit and DOLA. I see that support there. They have been responsive.
Okay. That's gratifying to hear.
It's pretty hard to say, you know, I mean, it goes back to we've got that many jobs and that employer, and back to the very beginning that, you know, there should have been some sort of stipulation, in my opinion, that, you know, we will give VF an incentive with the stipulation that any jobs or entities that are located in Colorado not relocate. And that's
yep.
where the program doesn't provide for that. So, and that wasn't discussed at economic development.
Kind of like the Jumpstart program. You don't go steal business or
exactly,
already
right.
existing
exactly.
Colorado business.
Exactly.
To start up a new business and get economic incentives for
spot
it.
On. Exactly. And so that is that's a hole in that program, the Job Growth Incentive Tax Credit program, and I'd love to see a policy change on that. Clarity there.
You know, the gratifying part is that there were actually 15 of those individuals that really want to stay here.
Well, there's like 30.
Oh,
30
15
actually.
Have already
15
have
transitioned.
Secured new jobs here.
Oh, okay.
And then another 15 more in limbo and want to stay. So
that's a lot.
It is.
There's a lot of talent that it speaks to the keeping our community mm-hmm. a great place to live. That's why they want to be here.
Yeah.
They're not staying for the incentives.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're creating their own.
And that's band. And that's their that you know that is our goal from the onset. Is okay. So this decision's been made. Our strategy and tactic now has to be to keep these folks, any and all that we can.
Right.
So, and I think that being able to have half of them here is pretty good.
Well, there's a measure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to move on to our budget requests here, but let me skim this, see if there was any other items that I wanted to mention that jump out of importance. It's been a busy couple months. Rural Jumpstart Award certainly went down. We had a Hero Club. They've committed to 8 jobs above that average annual wage here, which is $43,000 a year. So they'll have starting. They've committed to 8 jobs located here in Broward County, which is good to see. And I went down and advocated for that, and as well as Randy Judacious was on the phone for that. That effort. So
I thought
really
that state program to incentivize businesses to have location neutral jobs was
yeah.
also interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know
no,
if
that's
you
good.
Just briefly
that's
mention
good that you
that.
Mentioned that one. So it's called the COMP program, COMP, and they've already changed the name of it to a different administration. And
bureaucracy.
Right. So essentially, it's a business attraction program. So at the state level, State Office of Economic Development and International Trade is trying to recruit new businesses into our state. A lot of the, a lot of those businesses, as we know, land along the Front Range, and you have economic development organizations, economic developers on the Front Range that are working directly with those site selectors and businesses that are helping guide that process for them to land in Colorado. Anyways, this program combines two incentive programs that the state has to encourage those companies that are coming in to hire location-neutral workers. Any of those location-neutral workers, however, would have to be in a county that has already been approved for the Rural Jumpstart program. So thankfully, we've already gone through that process. We've got that, so we're automatically included in this program. So it's kind of a good example of just kind of laying the groundwork and some other opportunities that would come up. Here again, what's key, and we're working on this internally, the Chamber is putting together a prospect packet so I can provide to my colleagues along the Front Range that will be working with prospective businesses so that they know Route County is involved in, would Route County is included in this program, that they could hire location-neutral workers that would be located here. So it's an exciting program. So I think it's a neat idea. We'll see where it goes. Okay. Let's shift over. I wanted to...
Sorry, quick question
yeah.
on the Rural Jumpstart. And the one you said that was approved and the rest... Who's responsible for the follow-up with the tax exemptions and the rest? Is that...
Sure.
Because we then have granted personal property tax relief through that whole process, and I guess just the communication link for the whole loop, as your picture says, the loop that gets back to the assessor and the rest downstairs, and on all that stuff. So
that's a great question. My presumption is Oetta and Dora, but let me ask that question.
That sounds fine. I appreciate that. That'd be great. Because I guess we want to make sure, we committed to that, so we want to make sure that it's not a burdensome process as it goes through and the rest. The costs outweigh the benefits in the first place. So
Let me ask that question. So, see what they say. Also, I attached the Secretary of State's quarterly business and economic indicators if you are interested. That just came out last week. Okay. While I'm here, I also wanted to take some time to chat about our budget request for 2020. Okay, so this is the packet we submitted. Everything is essentially the same, except we'd like to increase the amount requested up to $77,000 for this next year. So an increase in funding. We're also doing the same with the city, increasing that request amount. When you jump to the budget sheet, you can see the history of where we've been at over the last several years. What the chamber share has been, so we just want to be able to maintain that three-way balance that we've had, as well as increasing costs. We haven't increased since 2014. It's been at the same level at $60,000, so there hasn't been any change increasing what are all our other increasing costs that we've got. So we want to it's been more of a challenge in my programming section to keep up with items. As you know, I guess step back a little bit. My goal here with this program has really been to stabilize it, build trust with our investors. That's the city and the county and the elected officials, as well as staff. So that they can see some progress, they can see some results, and I've been hesitant to ask for more funding in the last several cycles because of this. I think that for economic development, it's important to be able to show some of those results and to build some of that trust initially before trying to develop and expand the program. So with the support of the Economic Development Council, as guidance, we've been able to develop these programs that we've got listed below, and we've been working through those. I feel really good about the direction that they're going. I've defined what they look like, but now we're getting to a point where we've got to put some money into it to make them happen. So I was going to say, Kara, what other items
on the website?
So some of the
data plugin
key items that I wanted to mention, and this is largely where additional funds would go to, is our economic data program. I get a lot of requests for economic data, and it is one of those items that takes so much time. I want to be able to provide prospects that are looking at moving to this county or folks that are looking to open a new business data and information to get going. And that's really a classic economic development role. But I'm just not able to do that at a level that I think is really serving serving those folks. There is a data plugin that we can get into our website, which would automate a lot of this. I know in the past the music community invested in data research and all of that. I think that was probably a significant investment that perhaps we kind of questioned what it was, what's the value, and what's there again, what's the feedback, what's the outcome of it. So what I've really looked at putting together here, done a lot of research identifying how we could get additional data that really targets this very specific for economic development. And so what you see on the front page of this package here, this is the best example. I really like this. So Grand Junction Economic Development Partnership, that's the front page of their website. And so in the upper left corner, they've got their different bars there, site selection for building sites, and as well as data resources. And so you flip over to the next page. Go to the next page. Actually, not the second, we'll go to the third, since I'm talking data. This is essentially their data plugin, which goes into their website. And it provides labor force information, demographics, as well as consumer expenses. And those are the three key areas that businesses typically are looking at when they're relocating, starting a business. And then below that, this is super heavy on data, but this is the type of information that's available, and it's updated automatically through this. It's a tremendous resource. Through this company that provides it. So it's this company. It's called GIS, and what they do essentially is give you some code, and you plug that into your website, and then it's always there, and it's always updated with new data.
So somebody's got to be updating it to them.
Yep, and so they, on the back end, they've got their development team that's constantly updating the data, pulling federal data or state data to keep it going. So this would automate what is currently taking a lot of time and bandwidth to get some work done. And you can see here the information that's provided. It's overwhelming.
It looks like a great tool. I guess
it's a great tool.
It's just kind of, frankly, it's a little disappointing that USDA or one of our other governmental partners
isn't already doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're right. No, it's great. So.
And nobody is. There's not another. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. It's a process of going to census data. It's a process of going to Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's go to the states. Go to all of this stuff to pull it in together. And it takes a lot of time. And I think we had Valley Data Partners, which was really nice, but they weren't focused on business.
No.
They weren't focused on diversifying our economy and starting new businesses.
No.
That's what this is. That's what it's all about. Other communities, they've got a lot of communities across the country that do this. I thought that Mesa County is really nice. I think it's a good example. It's in Western Slope. So,
well, there's no doubt the Grand Junction's been really showing some leadership in economic development. Yeah. They really get it.
And I pay attention to that because they're able to communicate that and also able to provide what new businesses or new entrepreneurs are looking to do and the right information. So,
and they're a prime example of work in industry clusters.
Yeah.
They're
closer.
Especially their outdoor rec clusters.
Exactly. So that's one component of it. The other component on it is that I put it under our business attraction program, but it's that second page there of that packet that I gave you. And so you'll see there, it's essentially a tool to identify commercial property. So what happens here is I get folks that approach me that are looking for property, commercial space. We know that it's limited here.
Maybe.
Got some in your app,
right? So, but on the second page there, it gives you kind of the vision. And on the top bar of their website, it says, site and property search. And so this is what this additional item for the website would look like. It's essentially an on-site real estate tool.
So
only for commercial, though. Only talking about commercial.
Right.
After having conversation with staff, I sent out a poll to some commercial realtors here to kind of gauge their interest and what they thought about it, and what they'd be willing to pitch in some money for it and what that would look like. I think that they need to have skin in the game on it. I was able to get four responses, which were all positive, and said that they would use it.
Some kind of an agreement with the Board of Realtors to access their information to be able to gather this kind of data.
They don't. So in the upper left-hand corner, it says add properties. So each of the commercial realtors that want to be involved in this pay into it, and then they get the access code. They can go in and they update their properties. They keep all their commercial property in there. So it just creates a platform.
So what's the $9,600 for it?
You would think it would be in the interest of the Board of Realtors to just give them this information. It's just that much more exposure for their properties.
Right. Yeah.
The MLS stuff is really complicated.
Yeah. But what's nice about it is you're including it on your economic development site there. You know,
right.
We've got so much activity, you know, on our website already. So let's leverage that, and so have people start looking around the commercial spaces around there. So, anyways,
so we're running short on time.
I know you probably have some questions.
Yeah. Wasn't that the $9,600 mm-hmm. item then? So if the realtors are paying, which item was this?
So that would be Zoom Prospector and $9,100. For that. If I was able to do a 2-year, I would be able to get it down lower to 89.
So I think Doug's question is, he's not seeing the income side of the equation from...
Right. So there is... Yeah, so where is the income going to them in addition to the 91 that we're paying them?
That's a good question. So I'm trying to figure out here. So if I've got... I know I've got four that are interested in it, but it's trying to figure out what they'd be willing to pay. I need some seed money to get this up and going and try and get more folks into it. You know, are they willing to pay $200? You know, so I've got four that say they'd maybe be able to pay $200 into it, so that'll offset. But can I grow it and get, you know, our 15 or 20 commercial brokers paying what's the right price point to offset this and hopefully make it sustainable? So.
Can I have a different question about the plugin. So is that $9,100 just for the real estate part? And then the $6,650 is for all this other data? Okay. Thank you.
Two separate companies.
No, it's the same company.
It's the same company? Two different products.
Two different products from the same company. They've got a suite of other products, which I would love to do, but it's just...
These are the two.
These are the ones that I get a lot of requests on, and it spends a lot. It's a
and
lot of
those,
time. And I, you know, I can't direct somebody to a certain realtor.
And those two costs are ongoing. Do I understand that correctly? Those are annual charges.
Correct. Okay. I would be able to get them lower if I was able to sign a long term contract, but I'm not able to do that.
So it's a 1-year annual right now.
Yeah, it'd be 1-year annual. So if I was able to sign a longer contract, that would be helpful. But I can't.
So I'm much happier about the 91 little concerns me a little bit about, you know, how much money we're dumping in. I mean, all three of us that are dumping into that on the behalf of the realtors and coming to the table.
Yeah.
Not like they're bleeding, so.
Yeah.
But they're not able to use it unless they pay some fee of which we have not established yet.
They can't search us as a seller broker?
Or they can't add the property.
They wouldn't add their property. They wouldn't have access to add their property, so that's incentive for them. So,
but if they don't
try
add
for us to set a
property,
the price point. Yeah. What's the price point that I can get here to get them to pay into so that they can start adding? I don't know what that price point is.
And then again, I'm kind of all right being the helper on this thing.
Yeah.
And whether we're the whole...
Kit and caboodle.
Yeah, that we're... Yeah.
Is there an opportunity with the Board of Realtors rather than with each individual realtor?
So I talked to Ulrich, the Board of Realtors, and he said, this looks like a great thing. We use a different MLS system here regionally than what they do in different parts of the state. And I said, well, is there some way that they can have some sort of tool that we could use that separates out commercial? And I think so, but let me get back.
What about Zillow?
You trust Zillow?
I mean, sort of.
No, I kind of like this other part. I mean, I do.
Yes. My real estate.
That's exactly. Yeah. That seems like a good bank.
Really trust
that
bank.
Yeah. I also think there's a lot of other uses.
For what our community would be great. Obviously, for just data generally, but this is specific for new businesses and startups. I think it's really targeted. So I think that would be helpful. So.
Well, and I would just say that John has worked incredibly hard over the last few years, 2 years that we've had him on board, to create an incredibly strong foundation. And now we're ready to kick it up a notch. And we need your support. And we need the city's support. It's a team effort. And it's also, and you can see here that the chamber is contributing significantly as well. So I know that we're running short, but this conversation doesn't need to end here. We're happy to answer questions at a later date as you guys circle around.
We love budget season.
Oh, it's like half of the year for
like
you guys, right?
Board of Equalization.
It's almost as much fun as Board of Equalization.
Not that exactly.
Thanks for not protesting the property value.
Almost did.
I know you almost did.
Almost.
So he's got the other one.
Over there. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Tim's going to take it home with them.
That was very good.
Sorry.
We're going to be rolling out a newspaper article this
year.
The pilot.
I'm still doing some
article.
That's right. I was living right there.
Just the history thing. This is
transitioning to a new life at that point in time as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just curious as to where your thoughts are on getting South Rock included in the CRC.
So, interesting.
No, I don't have a bad question.
On Sunday night, I went to a dinner sponsored lunch, and that question came up quite a bit.
Okay.
And I think. Not yet. Okay. That's my sense of the community. They're probably not there yet.
Okay.
But I do think that Northwest Colorado Community College is struggling to the point that I think it's ripe for a conversation with the, especially with the school board, the Southland School Board, to see if they're getting what they need from CNCC.
Right.
I suspect that they're not.
Well, in that conversation, it just served in Colorado, I spurred some motivation from, it was Mesa University, saying, like, I'm acknowledging that we're not serving you well enough. How can we improve? So even if it just does that for CNCC to step up their game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No,
thank you, guys.
Thank you.
For your time.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
We'll talk to you.
John, good to see you again. Thanks,
see ya. See you, Cole.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Cole.
Doug, good to see you.
Thank you. We'll see you.
Sorry. Thanks for waiting, Kelly. Come on up.
Switch it up all day long with you. One topic to another.
Keep it interesting.
Thanks.
We may be able to get back on schedule or however you want. I just wanted to make sure to
give us our lunch break a little bit. It's unless you guys have somewhere you have to be.
No.
Yeah. I think we're all right.
So I had to switch today because we had a Northwest Directors meeting yesterday with Michelle. And the big news was the crisis conversation. We had that call with Rocky and several other people from the region at the end of July. And that conversation ended with, we still are in the process. You know of a contractor, let us know. The conversation was, we don't have any providers for a Rio Blanco Moffitt or route. So I used my opportunity with Michelle Barnes to tell her that that's not acceptable. She said, well, we're in negotiations with Mine Springs. We should have a contract by Friday. But no one was telling me this or telling anybody this because Rocky was on the phone and so was Mine Springs. But we're hearing from the local Mine Springs that they were told to have an exit strategy, that they weren't going to provide that services. So I don't know. It's just political.
Are we in work session now, or are we in the
work session? This is my DHS update. So.
Yeah, this is an update, so we don't need your time.
That was my question.
Okay, sorry. Is that okay? Can I talk freely?
No, go ahead. No, we can turn off.
It doesn't matter.
We recorded it. So.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
All the changes.
Awesome, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we are considering approval of the 2015 building code amendment. So, Todd, will you just give us a
overview here of the changes? Yeah, I'll quick run through these. Yeah. There's 13 total items, changes. So the first one here is just changing it from submitting paper copies to electronic. So we missed that last time because we've been doing electronic submittals for 3 years now.
So this is a retroactive change?
Simple Got change. Number two is we're going to undelete vacation timeshare properties. So this came into the 09 codes as a deletion based on fear that ADA was not being covered properly if somebody chose a vacation timeshare. That's, however, not true. Chapter 11 clearly has ADA regulations that need to be met for vacation timeshares. And so what historically was happening, folks couldn't choose vacation timeshare, so they were shoved into a hotel category. A vacation timeshare is not a hotel because it's a non-transient environment where you're there at least 30 days a year. So we just want to allow people to choose vacation timeshares. In the county, you don't see this. In the city, it's where you would see this quite frequently.
So again, for the premise here, now we're only talking about what we're adopting for the county, right?
Yeah, but that we would want to allow, if we ever did allow a development such as a vacation timeshare, we would want the applicant to legally choose that as their path of code compliance. And in Chapter 11 of the IBC, that matches up with the Department of Justice, fair housing, everything. It's just, it was more kind of a, I think back then from what they explained to me is they thought it was more of a personal opinion that they thought somebody wasn't truthfully using it as a vacation timeshare, where it was more like VRBO, nightly rental. But we should allow a person to legally disclose what they want to choose to use their building for. And if they weren't using it properly, that would become a code enforcement case, not something at the time of permit submittal.
So, and these changes, that you're going to present this to all of the entities.
Yeah.
The assumption is we all
correct
adopt
the adoption.
And again, that's what it's kind of to.
Yeah.
So we have a consistent code across all of the entities.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just asking because we don't have timeshares.
Right.
We shouldn't be having any. They're not legal in
no.
the county. So anyhow, so
right.
I'm fine.
But our building code could reflect something different than our zoning.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm good.
Correct. Yeah. Okay, so number three was just adding a paragraph about construction use tax and that we collect that money. So that's just simply documenting the fact that we take that responsibility on, and it's handed down to us from Board of County Commissioners. Number four is we're going to undelete this section. This should have gotten undeleted when we did the 2015 code adoption originally in January of 18, and we missed it.
So this is a little confusing because your highlighted sentence says section 706.3 materials is hereby deleted.
But the paragraph above describes the change, so it says we have undeleted this section. Because we shouldn't have deleted it in the first place. So
in the actual document we're adopting, this isn't what
this
it
won't
says,
be there.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. This
That's
is just like a quick shortcut trying to give you an update of what's changing.
And thank you very much, by the way.
Yeah. So
and
just so,
so
you know, originally there was some materials that they did not feel comfortable with back in the 09 code as far as being what's termed non-combustible. But today we don't have those concerns because the code is written differently. Number five, let's see, we took a sentence out, the highlighted sentence. So this is a local exception to fire sprinklers and commercial buildings, and we needed to take that sentence out because what that was doing was preventing someone from using another section called 420, which is live-work units, instead of needing to go to table 5084. So we've been allowing them to do it all this time through like a policy, but just wanted to get rid of the policy and make it clear you don't have to go solely to 5084, depending on the type of occupancy. Number six is should have gotten deleted when we did the 15 code again, and that's because the state takes care of elevators. We don't review, we don't permit elevators. That's done by NWCOG. Number seven, we deleted Chapter 11 this time out of the IRC because that whole chapter is basically duplication of the energy code book itself, so it's not needed. number 8, we've had a long-time local policy on this that added these exceptions that are highlighted to this local amendment on liquid propane gas appliances. So we want to, again, get rid of our internal policy and just make it clear in the code that these exceptions are offered. Number 9, we deleted this section because the Broward County Building Department will not perform plan reviews on fire sprinkler systems, and this would only be, therefore, we should not have that in the building code adoption, because this would give somebody the opportunity to want Ted or I to perform a plan review on sprinklers, and we don't want to do that. That's done by the local fire district. Number 10, this has been done in the field. We've required this in residential homes, but never realized it only sat in the International Plumbing Code, which was applicable to commercial buildings. So we want this in the International Residential Building Code because it protects our wastewater treatment facilities. So essentially what that is most commonly is boilers or other gas-fired appliances produce acetic acid on the discharge. And so this little $18 filter gets put in on the condensation line and protects that. Okay, number 11, we're adding this into the code. It's access to provide plumbers a location to use a clean-out as a test tee. This has been a big complaint since I've been here. It was in the U codes years ago. They were allowed to do this, and the I codes, for whatever reason, took it out. And this is strongly supported by anybody that's in the plumbing trade, I can tell you that. Number 12 is just...
So why was that not in the... the code in the first place then, if it
would... It keeps coming back up every time ICC has a code hearing. So what it is, it's basically a clean-out that has a cap, right?
Yeah.
It has threads and it screws in. And years ago, that would be a test tee as well. It could lie vertical, it could lie horizontal. In the code, they didn't want that buried under the ground. But for whatever reason, I don't know why, because they say under clean-out access, it has to be accessible. But if you have a slab-on-grade home and you're trying to test the plumbing under your... how under your home, but you don't want access to that, you'd have to cut a hole in your concrete. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Per the code. And for what reason? So instead, we're saying we're going to witness the glue and the cap going back on. It'll never come out. Number 12 was simply adding the date into Chapter 14 of the existing building code. And that's that was something that we've always honored through a policy in the department, but we always forgot to enter the date on the International Existing Building Code. So that date is entered because that is shortly thereafter when the 1979 UBC became effective for the first time in Robb County. And that was the real true code that still exists today when it comes to fire separations, ratings of walls, and horizontal assemblies. And so it's important to know that somebody that built their project according to that code shouldn't get any breaks in this chapter. But somebody that didn't build their project under that code should be allowed to use this chapter.
Clear as mud.
Number 13 is the energy code that we talked about a little bit yesterday and at Oversight Committee. So we're adding those two additional options into the prescriptive method of compliance, strongly supported by a lot of contractors and design professionals. That's the one that will actually cut costs,
right,
in today's world versus increase, so that's good.
So Hayden never, was it Hayden that did not adopt the energy code?
They did.
No, they stuck with the 09, but this time around, okay, They're going to go to the 15 with certain deletions potentially that we might not have in Robb County.
Okay.
I think one would be whole house ventilation. And then they're reviewing this new proposal on continuous exterior insulation.
Okay.
14, so we deleted all. These were long-time amendments in the plumbing code, and we got rid of all of them because they were outdated. We should have actually got rid of them when we did the last 15 code adoptions. So it's a lot of it. It's on oil separators, the design, the sizing methods used to calculate it. All of our sanitary districts support this. Our public works departments getting rid of this because the IPC and manufacturers have long surpassed this old design method that came in when we adopted the 06 codes like years ago. So this is actually making it harder on design professionals because they're not allowed to use today's equipment that manufacturers produce that can handle a lot more gallons per minute flow to separate oils and other sand and sediments. And the last one was the sizing of secondary drains on roofs, which came out as well because the I-codes have updated our climate charts. So you base a secondary drain based on your climate you fall in on the map of how much rain you get in a 100-year storm. So we're okay. We don't need that anymore either. So a lot of these were just kind of cleaning up things that we missed last night.
So is this kind of like an annual process that we do, or
no.
When we come up, I mean, so how often do we do it, and what prompted you to just, so we do it whenever the need is enough that we need to readopt.
I think our goal is do every 3 years.
Okay.
Just an adoption every 3 years. And to be honest, when I arrived in July 17 and we were kind of headed down this path, and I just didn't see these items, some of them that I shouldn't have included at that time. I was still new here, about a month and a half.
All fine.
So I'll take ownership of those mistakes. But that's kind of what happened with the ones that were fixed. And now what promoted this primarily to make the change, and it wasn't just those things that we might have been operating under policies, but was the energy code. I think we heard a lot of complaints about the exterior insulation, lack of options when
it
comes to that.
Well, there was a lot of apprehension about us going in there in the first place on this.
So what really drove this early amendment is that we don't intend to adopt another new code until January of 2021. So let's fix what we know is not right and what's not working in the field today.
And
with the
practically speaking, hopefully we won't have any more of these updates until we get to 2021.
Correct.
You feel like you have picked up all of the
We could have lived through the ones that we had policies, but if we're going to go through this to do the energy code update, I thought let's just.
No, this is the right way to do it.
Okay.
So the next code is going to be the 2021, or what is it?
No, it'll
be
in 2021.
In 2021, we would adopt the 2018 series. So we like to lag behind two or three years, so we let people work out the bugs.
The bleeding edge.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we implemented or adopted the code, I'll take some level of ownership as the person in between who got that.
Our interim building director.
Some of the language that I think we were also talking about was we had some concerns about some of the changes that were in 15, and we did intend to come back kind of the next year or so with feedback from the building professionals and evaluate opportunities to change the code. So this is kind of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Got a number?
I will in just a second. 052.
Are you ready for a motion?
I'm ready. Are you ready, Tim?
I am.
Great.
Yep. So, Madam Chair, I move we approve Resolution 2019-052, a resolution restating and amending current effective building codes previously adopted by Rapp County.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Very good job.
You got the date and stuff on that other page that needed to be filled in.
Yeah.
You got a press. So when's your timing schedule for the rest of the?
We go to City Council on the, when do they come back? The 22nd? Is that right?
Are they on vacation?
Yeah, they're on a leave, right, at the beginning of August?
We call it vacation.
Okay, no, vacation. So we go to first reading, their first meeting back, which I believe is the 22nd, or the 26th.
No, August, right?
No, August. 27th. Sorry. My materials are due next week.
So I guess my question is, so I assume that you're going to get out a notice to your 400 people that you got on.
We did in the newsletter.
Alan, kind of give us a summary. We'll let you guys tell us what you have to say about it. And if there's anyone else who wants to make comments at that time, I'll invite them to do that. And we want to make sure everyone signed in with Deanna, so she has your names. And so if you both would state your names for the record, that would be great. Okay. And then we'll let Alan give us his background information.
My name is Marcia Sanford.
Thank you.
M-A-R-S-H-A.
And I'm Harry Kushneroff, K-U-S-H-N-I-R-O-F-F.
Thank you. Go ahead, Alan. If you want to just kind of give us the background on what's going on here, that would be great.
Okay, sure. So this request concerns the Sublet subdivision, and
points, I guess. So these are the parcels that are in question. The road running right through there is County Road 64, Seahouse Road, and it turns to gravel a little bit past these lots. And so the sublet subdivision, it's got a name, but a plat was never recorded. And so this is a map that was created. The date in the bottom right-hand corner is illegible, so I don't know what the date on this...
It was 65, but I think October.
Okay.
That was my original.
It says October 13th, okay. But the year is not on there. But this... It's staff's opinion that this was done prepared for illustrative purposes only. It was never recorded with the clerk and recorder's office. And I was able to find five deeds dating from July 65 to January of 68 that involved these parcels of land. And in those deeds are meets and bounds descriptions. They do not reference lot numbers. The deeds do reference this plat, but it doesn't reference a reception number or any other kind of recording information to say which plat it is referencing. So based on those legal descriptions and the lack of a recorded plat, staff's opinion that the lot numbers really don't because they were just described with meets and bounds, a distance and bearing. And so in...
So where did you find that again?
Marcia gave this to me.
And so it was never recorded? We don't know that it was recorded?
I searched the clerk's site with sublet, multiple different spellings, and was not unable to find anything.
So this piece of paper never existed downstairs in our clerk and recorder's office, something that you had in your records.
I didn't realize I had an original, but I did. It was this, my lot is 15, and it's co-owned by me and Robert Chappelle. And it was left to us, and then when we put it up for sale, that's when we found out there was a problem.
Okay. And so none of those stamps or anything that are on the bottom of this document have anything to do with the county?
No, it has a raised seal that shows he was a certified surveyor.
Okay. A surveyor stamp.
Okay.
Yeah. So well, before we, I think you should continue, but I just want to clarify that we're not considering the subdivision exemption today, which is going to be requested at a later time.
Right.
We're just
now
talking
it's
about
just
a fee waiver.
Waiver of
okay.
fees.
Thank you.
Correct. And so this is an aerial photograph that shows the current configuration of the parcels. The letters on there are just to help explain the history of the parcels. So in 1994, parcels A and B had a subdivision exemption approved by the board.
Okay. What year?
I think 1994. And there was a subdivision plat that was recorded for those two parcels. And then, let's go in order. So then, parcels E and parcels F, in 1996, there was a quitclaim deed that moved the property lines. And then also
so
in 90s.
Before you go any farther, so were those, when the 15 lots were any of those transferred out to other properties then? Would, I mean, through quit claim deeds and other than what you're talking about right now?
There were conveyances starting in 65, going through 68 from Sublet, who was the original owner and who subdivided them.
So,
except he never really subdivided them.
He subdivided them by means and bounds,
okay,
instead of by plat.
So, and again, so at that point in time, I guess my question is that they were legal, non-conforming lots.
Correct.
And so that's going to be the big question that we're running into, is when did they become illegal, non-conforming lots versus legal, non-conforming lots.
Correct. So,
because in 66 there was no non-conforming to be conforming to.
Correct. So So I'm just going to go through this history a little bit, and then I'll get circle right. back to your question.
You're doing great. Thank you.
So, again, E and F, there was a quitclaim in 96 that moved the boundary line, and then also in 96, a quitclaim between F and G, which moved the property line, and then D and E, there was a boundary agreement in 2010, which moved the property line. And so you're correct that they were legal non-conforming lots, but once these quitclaim deeds and this boundary agreement were recorded, it adjusted the property lines, which essentially made those lots lose their grandfathered status because they were not in the configuration that they were in prior to 1972.
Should we have been notified of that, a change in our status?
You're the property owners are who created that change in the status. And
the status is the county's, your status, the planning department.
The classification of those lots changed from legal non-conforming to non-conforming.
So if that were to happen like today, how would someone know that they had moved from being conforming to non-conforming?
I mean, unless planning is notified of that, there's not really...
So someone can record a change in those lines without... You.
There's not an automatic referral from the clerk and recorder's office.
And there's not, if somebody can do a lot line adjustment right now and create an orphan parcel as well.
Yeah. And so currently if there is, so then that deed gets recorded at the clerk's office. This is today's policies and procedures. The deed gets recorded at the clerk's office, that goes to the assessors, and the assessor creates the account. And if there is a parcel less than 35 that is created through a new deed, the assessor office does contact the planning department so that we can catch these as soon as it happens. But that's something that's been implemented in the past year or two.
And even at that point, you would be catching it after the fact.
After the fact. And so what we would do is send the landowners that are a part of this a letter saying, hey, there was a potential illegal subdivision that occurred. Please contact the planning department so that we can understand the intent and discuss options on how to rectify the situation.
Could they undo it?
They could fix it.
But then, by then, they've already lost their grandfather clause.
But there's really no way to go back to what you had before and then say, we're going back to the grandfather's status.
I mean, I think if they would, in this situation, if they recorded a deed that brought it back to the configuration that it was prior 72, then I think the planning department would look at that as it's in its current configuration, it's in the configuration that it was prior 72, and so we would look at it as a legal. So that's really, I do have additional information as far as building permits and variances and other that
stuff. But we'll talk about that.
But I didn't think that was appropriate at this time. I do have that information.
Would it be appropriate to add to the history right now as to why we're all sitting here today?
Well, hold on just a second. So we got staff's background, and I think what we do want to hear from you is why you believe that the county should waive your application fee as a result of these things, which I think...
Okay.
So before we head that way, I want to hear from staff if this is the best route to head.
The subdivision exemption.
Yeah.
Why you believe it is.
The other option would be going through the full-blown subdivision review process, sketch, preliminary, final.
Okay. We get it.
Asked and answered. So if you all want to make your case, that would be great.
Well, I don't know. I guess what I was trying to say when I said should be included in the history is why we're here. Would be the very end lot. Like I said earlier, it was left to me and Robert Chappelle a year ago. And so we own it now. And we put it on the market for sale by owner. And a man who was interested in it came to the planning department to just verify, I think, probably where the boundaries were. And that's when this all came to light. Up until that point, we were all living up there happily ever after. No, didn't know anything existed. We'd already done our due diligence earlier with moving the boundary lines that required funds of our own to do that. And we had to move boundary lines, so lawyers' surveys had to be done. And I think everybody here had to do that. So we'd already spent that money and invested what we thought was our due diligence in getting the lot straightened out. And then this pops up, you know, a month ago. And when we were brainstorming about why would this be beneficial to the county to help us, the biggest reason is because there's five landowners here. And rather than you piecemeal this with each one of us, you can do one survey for the whole thing, deal with all five of us as one, get this done, save time, and save a lot of money. So that's the main reason.
So I guess, question, so there's five versus there's seven lots up there, and then you own two of them, so that's six. It looks like all of them have all of them have something on them right now.
Everything has house on it. The end one is what is what's considered a single lot. The next one is Jim and Susan Berry's. That was when they bought that. That was three lots. Three lots next to them, and then a single lot. And then Harry, what's yours?
We're actually two and a half lots because years ago there was a dispute. A lot line surveyed wrong. From what I understand, we only got records of the lawsuit and everything. But they settled on that. He got 12 more feet into my lot. So there's not. Used to be three skinny, you know, all those were.
Yeah, they were very skinny.
Yeah, yeah. So mine would be two and a half of those, and the one next door would be one and a half. Because of,
so that's how they're broken up and why they're configured that way.
But there's five property owners and you're showing seven current lots. Is that right?
And two are the two that...
The A and B have been correct.
Yeah, that's what Alan said about they'd already done their exemption.
Oh, so we're only talking about C, D, E, F, and G right now?
Okay. Yeah, that's them.
And also, you got to understand, they inherited this, but they had to move trucks, cars, trash. They've been working on this for a year. It's financially been a drain. I'm amazed what they've gotten done. Now none of us realized that we had to do something. I bought 5 years ago, and we closed on it right here in town. Nothing brought up.
So within
Tyler Company's do great work around here.
Within the last 5 years, there was another opportunity for this to come to light. It didn't. So it's just been the problem has just been laying low. And for some reason, Alan or somebody in the office caught it when this guy who wants to buy my lot, I think he still wants it, he came in to talk about where the boundaries were and stuff. So
I have a different question. There's also a request in here to waive the hourly charges by the planning department. Is that right? And then there was some reference to the county surveyor.
There's a survey that's required with you when you do the exemption.
By the county surveyor?
Well, hire your own. And we thought the county surveyor would be the best option because of the history. And Tom sat in a meeting with all of us prior to this meeting. And, he just had so much knowledge about the history up there.
And there's a fee related to utilizing the county surveyor, I assume?
Well, yeah, he don't work for us for free. He gets a salary that doesn't include him working.
I think it's like $12,000.
He gets a salary for not working.
No,
he gets a salary for being the recording survey and signing off on plats.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood what.
No, that's
what
that's
it
fair.
And
question.
So you're also request. No, you're not requesting that the surveyor's charges be waived.
Yes,
no, they're requesting that we be the surveyor.
Okay,
that's the request.
The county surveyor.
I think that's kind of irrelevant.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, someone needs to pay a surveyor. Whether the surveyor that gets paid is Tom Effinger or some other surveyor, that individual is going to get paid. I assume each one of these has their own well accepted.
Yes.
Yes. outgrown what?
Well and septic.
Do you guys have other questions that you want to ask?
Do you guys have something that we
I guess I'm...
I would give that opportunity.
I could. Okay, yeah.
If we have other,
I'm afraid.
It's easier if you just stand at this podium so we can get you on the record. State your name, please.
My name is Ken St. Louis. My wife, Regine Seelan, and I own the D parcel there. I just wanted to say that in the initial response to the query that came by the potential buyer, it was stated that maybe the lots couldn't be financed. There would be problems with getting insurance and title insurance and all of that. I just wanted to point out that we financed our lot. It's paid off now. We got title insurance. There was absolutely no problem. We have a warranty deed certified, so that maybe that argument holds water, but at least at that time, there was no question whatever that there was any problem with that.
Thank you. Any other property owners? Yeah, come on up and state your name for us, please.
Hi, my name's Mary Anderson, and I'm helping Marsha with the sale of her lot. And I think one of the things that all these people have done is they thought they've done the right thing. They've hired attorneys to do lot line adjustments. And so me kind of a fly on the wall looking down on this, the fact that our local attorneys don't know about this subdivision platting and the surveyors that they hired to do all this work didn't know these plats were supposed to be recorded, I think we have to look from the inside, from the county, like we might have done our constituents a huge disservice by not having some outreach or something, because I don't understand how $10,000 in attorney fees, $5,000 in surveying fees, and here they are today with what they've done is wrong. So I think there should be some introspective look, like, okay, as a county, how did we miss this? How did we not help our public realize that our process was beyond what local attorneys and surveyors know to do? So, you know, that's where I feel these guys are just completely getting shellacked, is because they thought they did everything right. So what do they do now? Do they go back and sue their attorneys? Do they go back and sue all the local surveyors that helped with all this stuff? Because they had all these professionals involved. So, you know, something to think about. Did we as a county impose something that was impossible for our local professionals to adhere to?
Thanks, Mayor. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Thank you.
I have a question for Alan. So, reading this, practically speaking, for the property owners of these five lots in question, there's nothing that would actually prevent them from selling that property to another buyer. It's just a question that in the future they would be unable to ever get a building permit to do a remodel or an addition.
Correct. Or if you have a fire and to replace, potentially replace the building if you had fire too.
You would not be able to get the building. Practically speaking, that's the problem that they have. If these folks chose not to do any construction work, they can carry on life as is.
Well, as an example, that's for sale, is still a small, narrow lot. And because of that, the man that's interested in buying it already is thinking in terms of a variance. And they won't even consider a variance under our circumstances.
That's
so
the
variance
building
is another
problem. Building permits and variances.
Right.
So Board of Adjustment, none of this would qualify for Board of Adjustment. We don't even, and I don't know, some of these buildings were probably built before we had a building code too.
I mean, but 70. we wouldn't... the planning department wouldn't accept an application on an illegal lot, because by accepting and processing that application, the county would, by default, acknowledge the legal status of it.
So it became illegal again when the surveyor filed a new plat by meets and bounds.
Or the new deed, the new deeds, yes.
Well, I got a potential suggestion, maybe. So
maybe before you make the suggestion, let me. I can't remember your name.
Mary.
When you know, I was sitting here nodding when you were suggesting that the people that are really responsible for this problem are the title company, the surveyors, and the lawyers, I guess, and I'm happy to hear your suggestion, but I'm really struggling to understand what the county did to create this situation. I'm sensitive to your suggestion that in a perfect world, everybody in the county would be talking to each other and understanding this, but I'm having a hard time faulting anybody within the county in the past. Everybody kind of did their job the way they were supposed to do it. This is truly kind of a unique situation.
Well, I think it's you. Yeah. Now, hold on. We're not having a back and forth.
Having said all of that, Doug, I'd be fascinated to hear your suggestion.
Well, again, I'll follow up on your comments too. I don't think the county has a responsibility here. We're doing what our regulations are, and it's buyer beware, and you know, the title company, just like you said, and the rest of them, and you know, do your due diligence at the same point in time. I'm really troubled how it was a buildable lot, and when the last building permit was issued, there was building permits issued on there. Probably back in I'm troubled then all of a sudden now because of our new look at it. And it's not like we're increasing density and making 7 new lots in addition to the 14, or anything. So my suggestion, and again, back to the comment, we really can't waive the surveyor fee. That would be out-of-pocket costs for us that we would have to pay, no matter who the surveyor was. And so I'm in somewhere meeting in the middle here. And again, I'm sympathetic that, you know, and I think there was, you know, their comments could be made as, you know, why would I and Hayden be in half of the pay for the for part of this thing? And why would you be paying for your coming out of taxpayer dollars out of your place in Yamp or Steamboat that we have to pay for, you know, to fix this problem? So my meeting in the middle kind of solution here would be that we waive the planning department fees and assist them in the best manner forward and to facilitate the process, and then having them come up with the surveyor and surveying fees and the rest, kind of split the apple in the middle.
So I have a question around that.
Okay.
So help me understand the application fee of $2,232. The hourly charges would be in addition to the $2,232, or would it be charged against the $2,232?
So the $2,232 is a base fee. So we charge $134 an hour towards that base fee. And then once that base fee is exhausted, we then charge our time at $134. So based on the math, with the base fee, you'll get 16 and a half hours worth of work. Any work spent on it past 16 and a half hours would be charged at $134.
And do you think, just for a subdivision exemption, do you think that that would be more than 16 hours?
Typically, I would say yes, but
this isn't honest.
Yeah, until you get into the weeds, it's really hard to give you an accurate answer on that.
So I have a different question related to that fee. Is that $2,232? One fee would cover all 5 of these property owners?
Correct.
So we're talking about a fee of approximately, it's less than $500 per property owner.
Yes.
Okay.
Plus the surveying, which we don't.
Plus the surveying. I understand that. Yeah. This is such an unfortunate situation. I mean, I feel for what has clearly happened. It has been a problem over many years involving many people, but I really struggle to see the benefit to Route County and the fault of Route County. And I don't know, when you're talking about sales of lots and those kinds of things, to me a $500 charge rolled into, it's just owning a property. I think there are a lot of situations where people have done something wrong that has to be corrected, and I struggle with waiving the fee.
Can I make one more comment?
You can.
Okay. So reading through those deeds, the deeds just reference a U.S. Forest Service Road. It doesn't reference a county road or anything. I don't know what the status of the research of the right-of-way for County Road 64 is, but that could be used as a justification for waiving the fees to say the county would clear up the location and the title of the right-of-way for County Road 64 through this section, and so that it's clear that the county does own it. I'm just offering that for your consideration.
So, I'm sorry, to clarify, I don't fully understand what you just said.
I'm struggling with that a little bit myself.
So the plat, as it currently stands, does not reflect the location of this road?
Well, there is no plat. And so the county attorney...
Well, a plat of some kind exists.
Not a plat.
No, okay.
Who knows how this road was created. It could have been a Forest Service road that was then given over to the county, or it was created by Road Viewers Report, or however it was created. I know Public Works, County Attorney, and GIS was doing that research to determine the boundaries of the right-of-way for all the county roads. I don't know if that research has been done for County Road 64, but if it has not, a plat, the subdivision, the exemption plat could lay out this is the boundary of County Road 64 and the county owns this in fee title through this process. So it would clear up the county's ownership of the right-of-way for County Road 64 through this area.
If we were looking for a public purpose to justify waiving the fee.
Public benefit, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But practically speaking, the ownership and use of that road is not at risk.
I would agree with you.
It's identified both as a Forest Service road and a county road.
Do you guys have other questions or comments? No? Tim?
I think I find myself falling somewhere in between you two.
So, you know, we can fall in between somewhere in there, too. You know, we can waive, you know, $1,500 or something. It's part of the county's investment, you know, based on some finding a realistic concept of what, you know, I'm not saying that we owe fault here, that we owe replicants because of fault. I don't think we do either. I don't think that either. And yet, you know, we have our staff working now, and you know whether we still have the opportunity and to have those staff being working on projects, and, you know.
One thing's for sure, I want to cap the amount. So because we've just heard from planning, this could be 30 or 40 hours or whatever, and then we just absorb that cost. I would suggest waiving a total of $2,000 and counting it. At that point, not waiving the surveyor.
Is that a motion?
Sure. Madam Chair, I would move that we waive a total of $2,000 of the application fee for the subdivision exemption application, noting that any costs above and beyond $2,000 will be borne by the applicants, and also noting that we are not waiving or providing for the survey of these properties.
And I'll second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
I'm going to vote against the motion, and for the reasons stated previously. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is it okay if I ask Alan a question?
Probably.
Yeah.
Grab him outside.
Okay.
We have more to do.
Thank you.
Wait, I was on vacation. It's okay. How was your vacation?
It's good. Yesterday was a long time.
Where did you go?
I went to the Grand Tardy Bluegrass Festival. So 8 hours of drive time with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old after 5 days of camping. It's a tough day. It's a long day.
You didn't wear them out while you were camping, so they just slept on the way back?
8 hours is a long time to sleep in the car.
The 4-year-old, Raya, she slept a total of about an hour.
She's a spitfire. Okay, so we are hearing a request to authorize distribution of funds to the Steamboat Springs School District.
And so the Steamboat Springs School District did submit a new letter detailing a little bit better how the fees would benefit North Route, since that's where most of the fees that are being held come from. They reiterated the same type of uses, security upgrades, communication upgrades, the purchase of the new school site, and those types of things. They did also state that all kids from North Route attend high school in Steamboat Springs, so there is a direct benefit based on that as well.
So I told you guys this already, but I met with Brandon and Mark just to make sure that we were all on the same page, and Chad met with us as well. Mark wanted to convince us about their funding formula, and we told him we didn't care about the funding formula. We cared about these funds being used in North Route. And Brandon was in support, and their letter reflects the discussion that we had as well.
So you're comfortable?
Yeah, I feel comfortable with it.
Good.
I don't know.
It works for you.
I guess the other thing I was concerned about is making sure they were understanding of the constraints that they needed to be applicable to capital expenditures. And I guess, the items that are listed in here, you can kind of twist and bend, into being, as identified as capital expenditures. So I'm fine, and I appreciate the funds being used to benefit the area that they came from and the rest. So, Madam Chair, I would move that we authorize the distribution of funds collected through the subdivision process, specifically authorize the distribution of $182,162 to RE2 Steamboat Springs School District.
Second.
Any other discussion? I just wanted to note that I had asked Chad about when these funds are distributed, and he said when the minutes are approved is when.
Yeah, Stern Ed said that's what he needs in order to process the money. Yes. Okay.
So just so
did we already distribute the money to the other two school districts?
I think the minutes are, if they didn't get approved today,
we have a whole staff who on that. So.
Maybe
next week. Next week.
Depending on which.
Yeah, but Alan's keeping an eye on that. So.
Okay.
Yep. So not yet.
So we'll get that information to Stern Atlas as soon as they're done.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing the follow-up work on that. Yeah, come on up. Rockfall mitigation is first on our agenda.
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Pass you. Right here in the middle, right? Take a seat. Go ahead, Julie. Assuming you're
on this. I'm looking for
Okay.
Here.
We have it. I have it. It's on the
back. I can read it.
That would be great. Okay, we're here for consideration by the Board of County Commissioners to waive the formal purchasing process and approve the award and authorization of the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order for rock fall mitigation to Geostabilization International, LLC, in the amount of $112,072.50. The background on this is the rock slide on County Road 29 occurred during the winter of 2018, and the road, Rock County Road and Bridge Assistant Director contacted GSI, Yenter and Company, and Midwest Rockfall Incorporated. GSI met on site May 21st, 2018, and provided an estimate on June 3rd, 2018. Yenter and Company no longer provides this service, and Midwest not spot. So we did try to get pretty close, but that didn't happen. The contracting services for rock mitigation are put out to bid by CDOT, and GSI is currently under contract with CDOT, so we can piggyback on that state contract. GSI has provided an updated quote on July 22nd, 2019, and the timeline to complete this project in 2019, which is probably best serves the county to get this mitigated.
I have a question.
Yes.
About the amount. So the letter that you attached from GSI lists an amount of $109,875.
Yes, but they didn't, at the time that they were quoting, they weren't aware that anything over $50,000 needed a performance and payment bond per our requirements. So we had to have them rebid.
Okay.
To include those costs.
So the final amount is that $112,000?
It is $112,000. Okay. And that adjusted estimate came in just after I was in school last week.
After you submitted it. Okay.
Yeah. So we are covered, though. We have all our documentation in order.
Where is this?
Just east of the intersection of County Road 53 and 29. Beyond County Road 55. Remember, we had pictures went around last winter where we had loader-sized boulders laying on the road and we pushed off to the side of the road. So usually when you have a rock slide with that, you have quite a few rocks that are still kind of hanging on the hillside as that stuff comes down. So that's what kind of precipitated the call to the rockfall mitigation folks.
And they're planning to complete this year?
Yes.
So then question I'd have then to do about the same thing on the write-up then. So the budget was $100,000 and the expenditure is $112,000, and then it says it may require a supplemental on $98,750, so it's really going to require a supplemental of
$112,000.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah,
and I guess the process question I had, I thought we were going to submit these supplemental budget resolutions at the time we knew that they were being incurred. Were we not?
I was under the impression that it was at the end of the year.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I just kind of recall that we were going to try to do these supplementals up front.
You know, when especially when there's not a budget for it in the first place, but there is a budget for this in the first place, and we need to figure out where the funds are going to come from. So I think from accounting's perspective, if the funds can come from at the end of this year from some other section of the road and bridge budget, then we won't need to take it out of cash reserves.
And there wouldn't be a supplemental budget required for that?
If this had just been a whole brand new thing,
maybe
never in the budget, we would use a supplemental
red line area of the road and bridge budget to another.
Got it.
It depends on what they find out at the end of the year.
And I confirm with GSI that it's a not-to-exceed contract, and if they find that as they're going along and finding more stuff, that they have to clear all additional work with us prior to performing it.
So, in fact, it is not to exceed? Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move we waive the formal purchasing process and approve an award authorization to the county manager to electronically sign purchase order for the rockfall mitigation to geostabilization in the amount of $112,072.50, and also approve the chairperson's signature on the notice of award for this project, and noting that I may need a supplemental budget at a later point in time.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're good.
I'll let you know when it happens. You can come see guys dangling on ropes, pulling rocks.
Where is that road?
Solid 8.
Solid.
Perfect. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
All right.
We are here for approval by the Board of County Commissioners and authorization of the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to MySlick, Inc. for the purchase of one new model Gerstead. Thank you. Forward folding wing plow in the amount of $55,000 to be used at Yampa Valley Regional Airport for snow removal on the 2019 AIP 45 funded CAT 966 loader. The loader was put out for bid by Mead and Hunt, who is our engineering firm that's managing the projects. And the airport director had budgeted $500,000 for the purchase of snow removal equipment to include a new loader and wing plow in 2019. The loader was put out for bid by Mead and Hunt as part of the airport expansion project and awarded purchase to Wagner Equipment for $419,000. This total price includes Mead and Hunt's engineer's cost of $33,000. The loader requires a specific Gerstead model forward folding wing plow that has a 3-month lead time for delivery, FOB, Yampa Valley Regional Airport. We did receive 3 bids. We went out for the RFQ process due to the fact that we already had the MySlick bid or quote on, you know, when we were doing the research on it, and we didn't want to discount them. And fortunately, we did get quotes, and they were in excess of what MySlick had quoted, so we think it's the best value for the county.
He's local as well, so.
We couldn't use one of our, this isn't the kind of thing that would be on the state bid list, or?
I didn't find it anywhere. It's a very specific.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
What's the other entity that we use for?
Sourcewell.
Okay, which is a nationwide.
Sourcewell is the nationwide. We've joined that group for their co-op purchasing.
But this just isn't on that list.
No, that wasn't on that list. It's a very, very specific
product.
Seems like
a pretty good chunk of metal, huh?
They are describing me as indestructible. We have two of them now.
Never was.
Is that on the record?
Yeah.
Get that in writing.
Built in Norway, that's why they weren't included in the AIP project, so they absolutely don't make
okay.
American
right.
standards. So we'll use.
And hence the unpronounceable name.
Yes, exactly. So essentially, we'll purchase this out of the airport reserves and then pay ourselves back with passenger facility charges, which the rules on use of those are a little more lax, if you will.
Well, noting that the Norwegians should know something about snow, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, but I got one more question. Then. So we budgeted $500 originally for this AIP.
Package.
Yeah, the whole package, which... And so then right now we've spent $419 on that package.
Yeah.
And then so that includes Mead and Hunt's $33,000 mm-hmm. is what it said. But then we can't buy this out of this thing because it's not qualified for the Buy America.
That's correct.
So which then this frees up some of that money back in your other AIP
it does.
Projects.
Yeah.
So it's not like it goes away.
AIP 46 as well, the pavement maintenance that we're doing came in well under
right.
what we bid. So all of that money is folded back into
the next project
for Commissioner Melton's signature. Yeah, so that all got thrown into the terminal project.
So and there's going to be enough money out of your regular budget and wherever that's coming out of to pay for this $55,000 you had.
Yeah. Yeah. Have almost $3 million in our reserves at the moment.
So, I'm missing my question then. So, is it going to need a supplemental budget? Probably.
I mean,
and that is buying a piece of equipment, so probably both means would mean. I'm fine with that, so I think we ought to just say that
it's going to require something. That it may require something.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now go.
All right. Madam Chair, I would move to approve and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to MySlick, Inc. for the purchase of one new model Gerstad forward folding plow in the amount of $55,000 to be used at the Yampa Valley Regional Airport for snow removal, noting that this may require a supplemental budget.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I leave this with you?
Yeah, sure.
This is the AIP 47 grant offer.
Great. And this will be on the agenda for ratification.
Yeah, I think we need to probably put all three of them. I don't know if you've ratified any of the three. Okay. So.
And then,
see what's been going on in Hayden?
No.
The thefts of cars.
Oh, I saw an email coming.
I haven't heard this.
Okay. Well, if you want to talk, we're going to make you stand at the podium.
Howdy.
Howdy. Howdy. Howdy. Here's some latest communications from interested parties.
This is all the same thing? Is this multiple copies?
That's multiple copies of the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Those are my latest emails from Stetson Ranch and Donston.
So will you summarize what's going on in the request for us today,
yes,
please?
In 2015, at the time the Iron Springs Ranch went into conservation easement, biological inventory was completed by Yampa Valley Land Trust, and they noted the occurrence of leafy spurge, which is a list B species in Colorado, and is also one of the 13 noxious weeds of Brown County. Because of its proximity to the upper Yampa and its situation above Stagecoach Reservoir, we didn't want to mess around with it. So we had a meeting, and it was delayed a couple of weeks as hay season was finished and things. Anyway, we had a meeting early October 2015, and it was noted at the time that a plan had to be in place and treatment had to start in the summer of 2016 and the fall of 2016. That occurred. The contractor that was hired was Don Stitton from Stitton Enterprises out of Jackson County, and he made sure that aerial applications were contracted with Mountain Air Services out of Craig, and it was both treated aerially, and Don did what he calls brush beating, the ground follow-up work on for some outlying populations that were close to a drainage known as Choke Cherry Creek. And that occurred in both 2016 and 2017. I didn't get any updates last year as to what had occurred, and Don confirmed in an email this morning that no work was done in 2018. When I spoke with him earlier this season, it was indicated that Frank Stetson, the owner of Iron Springs Ranch, had indicated that no money would be made available for monitoring at the very least. And it was evidently that was a misunderstanding on my part, as detailed in Don's email from this morning. But irregardless, the point was that we wanted to make sure that we followed through this year, because Todd observed some leafy spurge from County Road 14 right away on the hillside coming down from the area that had previously been treated. And we didn't know if they were new satellite populations that had just not been noticed before, or whether they were new infestations that had occurred since the last treatment. So, like I said, we didn't want to pass up an opportunity to move forward on this.
And I did tour the site with Yampa Valley Land Trust staff here several weeks ago. We walked the hillside, walked the draws. I've got photos here if anybody wants to see. Leafy spurge is fairly significant. So I don't know if that's as a result of this year, of course, given the water we've had from nature, there's lots of weeds that we haven't seen everywhere. But also the fact that it wasn't sprayed in 2018 gave me reason for concern. So visited with Greg about that after our walkabout, and that's how it came to you all, just because we want to make sure that everybody's in the loop and understands that this is a serious situation, that, especially given its proximity to the river. The infestation is getting quite close to the river. Knowing what we're dealing with west of Hayden, we don't want to see that situation south of here.
Yeah, the potential risk for all irrigated lands downstream from this site is significant if we get any kind of a reasonable population of Leedsburgs that's contributing seed into the waterway. So,
even through the reservoir?
Yeah. It floats.
And float right on out.
Yeah. So I mean, it's of concern. And I don't think Laura Woods was aware of the significant damage that has occurred to rangeland, especially in Montana and North Dakota. But I informed her of what had happened up there, that people have actually walked away from their ranches when the cost of treatment of leafy spurs exceeded the cost of, or the value of cattle production on those ranges. So I wanted to make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, we're already dealing with enough of a problem downstream from Hayden, so.
So I have, I'm looking at our resolution adopting the weed enforcement process summary. So the date on that's 2008. I assume that is still in effect. Otherwise, I don't know why it would have been in our packet. And so what I see here is that we need a written signed report from Rock County, and I understand that that was provided by Todd. Is that correct?
Or by you?
By Greg. Okay. And then the county will request an inspection from the landowner by sending written notification.
And we have sent them a certified letter making them aware of the situation. And Laura, they wanted to be here today, but they're in the middle of hay season, and with the weather we've had, they felt that they had to take advantage of the
I'm just confirming that we've followed our process here.
Yeah, I think we have.
This says requesting an inspection, but I understand that we've already done an inspection, so I guess I'm not clear on where we are in this process that's outlined in this resolution.
We would have to, if we hadn't already inspected it, because of the fact that the land trust is involved, we were already able to do an inspection to confirm what had already been observed from the county road.
Okay, now I understand. Thank you. And so have we notified the landowner of the presence of noxious weeds?
Yes.
I assume. And they have responded. I mean, this says acknowledge the terms of the notification. So what terms were laid out in that notification?
The treatment had to continue.
That's kind of irrelevant, too, because they haven't got the certified letter, maybe, too. So I guess we have to acknowledge the fact that they did receive, based on the response that we got from actually the email that we got from.
So I'm going through what it says in here. And then the next thing it says is submit an acceptable plan and schedule for compliance or request arbitration. So have they done, I mean, it says they had 10 days to do that. Yeah. Has that happened?
It has happened. She's been in communication with Don Stinton. I've been in communication with Don Stinton. He's prepared to move forward and treat the weeds this fall.
Does that qualify as a plan?
Yeah.
Acceptable plan and schedule is what it says in here.
Because Don has been involved with it for 2 years, and he knows how concerned the commissioners are. He knows how concerned my office is and Extension, as well as the land trust. And he feels somewhat caught in the crosshairs because he's trying to maintain a working relationship with Iron Springs Ranch, but he also wants to meet what we feel are the county obligations to control the noxious weeds. So I think Don's a good contractor. I think he's very knowledgeable, and I think he will follow through on getting it taken care of this fall. And Laura made it clear to me in my conversations with her that she intends to follow through from year to year until it reaches an acceptable level of control.
So will someone, say Don, be preparing a multi-year plan for control?
I can work with him, and I've indicated that that's what we want to do, is put together a multi-year plan to...
And then implement the plan. That's even more important.
To implement the plan and monitor to determine what effective level of control, because, you know, we may get a substantial reduction in stem count over a couple of years, but because we've noticed these satellite populations this year, it's going to require monitoring of, you know, a significant area up there, probably outside the original treatment area.
So can I clarify this just for a second? So Don is, he does the actual spraying.
He does.
He is not a landowner.
He's not the landowner.
So, I mean, the landowner is the one who has an obligation to comply. And so I'm a little concerned when you're saying that all we have is assurances from Don not involve the landowner.
Well, Laura has been in regular communication over the last couple of weeks with Don. He was out of town for a couple of days. But Don got Laura's email of, I think it was of last Friday, according to the email I got this morning. And he is, you know, prepared to work with the Stetsons to make sure that this continues on. And she said, even though she doesn't have power of attorney, she can write the checks. And she is prepared to pay Don as early as this week to make sure that he's contracted to do the work.
So we know from hard experience that eradication of this weed is actually unlikely?
Well, I would say not necessarily, because so far we're dealing with upland sites, and it's approaching the riparian site, but you can, I think, treat it effectively in upland situations, and I think over a number of years it could be eradicated.
Because we'll be able to use traditional chemical treatments rather than biocontrol.
And we have a couple of options up there, whereas in the riparian sites we're very limited, but we have the possibility of spring treatments with cordon, and we have potential for fall treatments with plateau or panoramic or paramount. And Don is planning on treating it this fall with plateau, which is a recommended fall treatment for leafy spurge.
Practically speaking, though, especially with the year that was lost without treatment, we're probably looking at a multi-year plan.
Yeah, I told Don that we need to figure on 5 years minimum.
So I am looking at the request to the commissioners today, which is to commence legal action to enforce this.
May I clarify that?
Yes, please.
So we are following the process as outlined in the resolution. Every situation is a little bit different from other situations. This one, given the weed that we're dealing with, we're on a slightly different course than we would a different kind of weed that can be controlled in a shorter time frame. This is going to take several seasons to hopefully get under control. But the expectation is that the property owner will submit a management plan. 5 years sounds great and reasonable, but given, again, the delay that's occurred thus far and the concern that if spraying doesn't occur in 2018, the infestations are likely to get, 19. Well, wasn't sprayed in 2018, okay. Apparently. It's only going to get worse. So the request is that the board authorize the county attorney's office to commence legal action if it's required.
I see.
Hopefully the property owner will come into compliance and it won't be necessary. But we don't want to suffer any further delay if, for whatever reason, they don't get the spraying done.
So I am certain that you will cross, if we were to approve this, you would cross all the T's and dot the I's on this. But I am, what I hear is you saying that you've talked with Don primarily and that we don't have anything from the landowner. And that concerns me when we're starting to talk about something like legal action.
The 10 days have not even elapsed yet, so we've got to allow some due process to take
yes.
place. And then But yes. So
but we're clear that this is with the landowner is the one who would not be in compliance. And regardless of what Don says, it's the landowner who has
an obligation.
You should
have an email there as well,
correct?
Beth, though, from this morning, from the landowner's daughter.
Who is not the landowner.
It's a family.
It's a family deal. It's an LLC.
We're doing okay.
Okay.
10 days hasn't elapsed
okay.
yet. The expectation will be that there is a management plan put in place with the property owner.
Okay. That's really the confirmation. Yeah.
And today, if we just get your authorization for the county attorney's office to commence legal action, if necessary, then we'll be well on the way. And if there's an indication that the property owner is not going to comply, then we will have already met this step in the process and then proceed.
It would be my suggestion that maybe we develop a contract that would obligate the landowner to follow through on a weed plan, regardless of what contractor is involved.
So the county, contract with the weed sprayer?
No, we would contract with the landowner, or I'm not sure exactly what the legal...
I think practically
speaking, the landowner is going to be obligated to complete the management plan that's put into place, and if they don't, we have the ability to commence legal action. So I guess I would question the need for an additional layer of the obligation on the landowner.
I mean, and we have a policy in place, and it sounds like we're following that policy.
And that policy comports with state statute.
Yes.
So the other option, just so we're all on the same table here, is we defer this. We are getting some action. We defer it till next week or the week after. And, you know, I'm fine with what we've achieved and what is being proposed and used to authorize the legal action based on the need of it. And we do that now. But if we're not comfortable with that, we can always come back and not do that now today and make sure something happens next week. And
practically speaking, we're not
now
actually
next week.
Practically speaking, we're not actually taking action today.
I agree totally.
Putting this on autopilot with the attorney's office to go ahead and take action if necessary.
I think that's the right thing to do, considering the timeliness of this. I mean, I think we need Eric to be able to move forward if necessary, and hopefully it won't be necessary.
Any other case, just because you authorize it today doesn't mean I'm going to be filing something this afternoon. We're going to, the effort is compliance.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
The timeliness of this, I mean, biologically, as far as controlling the weed, is that we want to have something happen during September.
Yeah.
Because that's the optimum time to apply Plateau to leafy spurge for fall treatment. So we want to make sure that that's going to happen. And I can put together a weed plan which outlines what I feel are the necessary processes to take care of or to manage the weed both fall and spring for the next 2 years. I can put together a plan that we can have in place.
Would the county attorney recommend that any weed plan that is agreed to by the landowner and by the county weed department be signed by the landowner and acknowledged?
Sure.
Okay.
Anything in writing is great. I don't think we need to call it a contract or anything that we've already spelled it out in our resolution here, a management plan. That's
okay.
Also what's required by state law.
Okay, so...
I have one further question.
Okay.
How long does this authorization last? Does it last till next year? Or
we're talking about submitting some kind of five-year plan, right? So if at this time next year they're no longer complying with...
And I'm actually asking...
It's a good question.
The question, when we're authorizing you to take prosecutorial discretion and to be able to exercise if you need, how long does that authorization last?
never been asked that before, so, but fine, as long as you wanted to.
And again, so I guess, you know, for grins, we ought to just say that that thing ends at the end of the year or something. That
yeah,
we come back and we have another conversation.
I think it would probably be worthwhile revisiting it on an annual basis.
Or next spring even. Yeah. So, and again, I'm all right. It was just a question.
It can't be forever.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if part of the plan shouldn't include a monitoring report so that we can keep up to date, because then that would say, okay, in 4 years we've got it down to what we feel is a manageable, you know, population. We've eliminated satellite infestations. We're still dealing with decreasing the stem count on the major infestation.
So I think you should include that in the plan that provides access to the Rock County Weed Program Director, access to the property X number of times per year until the situation is resolved.
It's been a question for me as to how the county's involvement with the purchase of development rights and the land trust, does that give us any special latitude? Or
I think that, personally, I think that's a separate issue.
Okay.
I mean, that's my opinion. I think we're just exercising our authority in terms of controlling weeds. I mean, certainly it's my expectation that the Yampa Valley Land Trust would follow through on their side of the monitoring and encourage the landowner to take care of this situation. But I don't think we should confuse it with what we're doing.
Okay.
So,
can I just...
yes, please.
Give me a minute to think about Doug's question a little bit more. My preference would be that there is no time limitation.
I'm fine with that, too.
We're not caught in some collateral attack at some point that we didn't, that it had expired. I think the board, what we're trying to accomplish here is procedural due process.
Yep.
So the administrative remedies will have been exhausted once you authorize the legal action without us having to come back for reauthorization at some future point if it's needed at all.
Well, and I think I would assume that you will keep us in the loop about where we are with that. It wouldn't be that something would be happening we wouldn't know about.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with it too.
So before we make a motion, I'd just like to acknowledge that this is a big step that the county has taken. This is not something that we take lightly. And I know from my perspective, after working with Greg and Todd and everybody else on the Yampa River Leafy Spurge Project, I've become highly attuned to how serious a situation this is, that it really goes to a level above and beyond what we normally deal with landowners that are not properly taking care of their weeds, and the threat that it represents to everybody downstream, I think, justifies taking this step. So do we need to have a motion directing this? So
authorizing.
Not directing.
You want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move that we that the commissioners authorize the county attorney's office to commence legal action to enforce Colorado state laws regarding noxious weed control in Rock County Resolution 2008-002.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thanks a lot, Greg.
So I have a question for you. So when you were up looking at how big a site is it as big as this room, or is it as big? Is it 100 acres? I mean,
it's
35 acres. A football field?
The primary infestation, when it was discovered at the time they did a biological inventory, was 35 acres.
On the whole 35 acres?
It was scattered over 35 acres on top of that mesa that you can't see it from the county road.
Oh, my.
It's out of sight. But
so it is not.
And there were some satellite populations.
So that's why the area spraying would really.
It's really the only way.
It's a significant infestation.
It's the only cost-effective way to do it in aerials, because you know a lot of times when people price aerial spraying, it seems really expensive until you weigh it against the cost for both labor and equipment to try to treat it with ground equipment. So.
Well, and I couldn't believe you said 30-foot roots on these things sometimes?
The potential for leafy spurge is to spread laterally 30 feet in a year, and each stem that comes up can throw seeds another 15 feet.
And the roots
have a potential of going 30 feet deep.
Which makes it, you can't go pull them.
No, pulling leafy spurge is
fool's
error. Yeah.
And this is one of the weeds that has decimated ranches in other places, mm-hmm. Yep. Is that correct?
And when we've gone on the Amber River leafy spurge float, it's an eye-opener to see going downstream from the Parks and Wildlife area on the Amber River. On both sides of the river, it's 20, 30 yards back, solid yellow, just continuously.
So
it's a big deal. And they've been fighting at Dinosaur National Park for years.
I just noticed it this spring, right there as you're turning onto 13 from the bypass road down there in Craig.
Oh, yeah.
When you just pull up on top of you're just overlooking the river, that whole place is, you can see that whole thing is covered with leafy spurge. I just noticed it this spring.
And that's, basically we've treated West Route as the containment area. We know it's there. We try to get to everything right away that we can and just acknowledge that it's going to be present on private ground because we can't get to all of it and not everybody's treating it. I know that I know one family out there that's treating it in the tune of $15,000 a year, and the brother is not treating it for a dime. So, that should be interesting. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Go to the bathroom before we carry on here. That's all right with you guys. And we go the rest of the way through, and then if we want to incorporate what we discussed, like we did, rather than going back to what we talked about last time and talking about it again, all the way through.
Okay, that's fine.
I'd like to do that, and then if Doug maybe would like to finish redlining after that,
because
I kind of like to get out to the hay meadow as quickly as possible today.
Okay.
You going to the hay meadow too?
No.
Well, you're more than welcome to.
I have zero interest in going to the hay meadow.
Where again are we at then?
So we're on G on page four.
Page 4 of 7 at the bottom of the page.
G number 1. Beginning of G.
Oh, okay.
You drew a line there too.
Yeah, I did. Okay, I thought I'd already made some changes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think we started discussing it,
and then we failed that.
Yep, that's right. And then, so, well, let's just wrap up at 2:35, like our agenda says, or whatever.
3:30.
3:35. Sorry, just so we know how long we have to spend on this. Okay, so you did make a change in there, Doug, about letters from the commissioners.
All right.
Yep, I included that, and they're going to be individual letters from on individual letter. And then I, on the G, well, let's see, was...
So that, actually, this G1, the other thing is that it's always that interesting situation we find ourselves in when I'm at CCI or you're at AG&C or Beth is at CCAT. Oftentimes we're in a situation where we need to cast a vote. So are we, am I expressly authorized? This has always been a complicated question to me. Am I authorized to represent the board on votes regarding how the CCI policy decisions?
Yeah, we are, kind of, yeah. I think all of us understand each of our other perspectives, and we would cast votes based on our collective needs to be discussed at later time. So,
but this comment granted specific authority. I think to Tim's point is, but what is the mechanism by which we are granting authority? And I think the only mechanism I'm aware of is our appointments list every January. And so, if you're designated as the representative to that organization, then you are being granted authority there.
And this would only really apply when there's an actual vote being taken.
On a steering committee.
On a steering committee vote. So how does AG&C kind of work on the same capacity?
So I tell you what happens, too. You should remember, if there's a split vote when both of you are there, they actually split the vote.
It's zero.
Yeah, if there's 1-1 or 2-1, they actually vote for the positive side.
At AG&C?
At
CCI.
AC&C really don't have two people there usually, and if we do, then it would be the same kind of way.
So, so CCI is kind of a little bit of a different animal because they go through such a formal voting process on taking policy positions. And then, like Doug said, one county, one vote. So the commissioners got to get together. Right. If there's more than one in the room and agree,
right.
And if they can't agree, then their vote, they don't vote, basically. So.
Well, and I think to this end, I mean, I had this question about, as the chair, signing things, for example. I mean, obviously we ratify those, but there's a lot of situations where I'm asked to make a decision about whether we're going to sign it or not. And I think that's the same thing, right? There's some authority granted, but there's also an expectation that you're representing the board. You're being granted to represent the board,
right.
Not to represent yourself for the board, you know? And so any of those situations, it's you have to take that responsibility seriously, I guess, that you're representing
everyone's perspective. So do you want me to put something in there about that? Or if
I don't think it hurts to do it. I mean, okay. That it's the responsibility of that commissioner to make sure their representation
sure,
is
representing the board.
Is representing board's the interest.
So that just you referred to the appointments list, and I don't recall, for instance, who's the alternate to AG&C.
You are.
Okay, so if I go to AG&C and there's something that needs to be voted on, then yeah. I can in good conscience cast that vote, presuming that I know that I'm representing the interests of the board, which...
I think to the best of your ability.
To the best of your ability.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and I guess to that, the authority to sign things, and again, that ratification, and not that there's been anything where I felt like it was a concern, but there's almost a liability, who's strong of a word, but in making that decision,
yeah, I agree.
Assuming that you're going to be backed up,
yeah,
right?
Well, hell no, not like that.
So we are. Doug, are you going to put something?
I was going to leave one in the way it is, and then add to it that
okay.
one that if you are voting, you're attempting to represent the board's concept as a whole.
And we're just going to assume that the appointments list is the specific authority that's...
That's, yep. You want to put that in too?
Yeah, maybe there should be some reference to it, other than...
Based on the appointment list.
I mean, because that is how we're granting authority.
Yep.
Okay.
Unless we do it by some other mechanism.
No, I mean, that seems to be the simplest mechanism.
Otherwise, it's just informal, which is not quite good enough.
Okay. Are we done with one?
I think so.
Number two, I actually modified that a little bit. Let's see what you think of this.
You emailed?
Oh, yeah. So the commissioner who votes in the minority is encouraged to explain his dissenting vote. But must respect the legitimacy. So everything else stays the same. But so is free to express and was
encouraged
to explain it. And I think we've done that all along anyhow, but I'm just putting it down on paper.
That's fine with me. Tim, any?
Nope, that's good.
Okay.
Three was left just the way it was. And again, some of this is duplicative in some of the areas that it's already in there, but after I was gonna move like three to the front, include it in there, but hell, it doesn't hurt to have it in there twice. We're all right. And four, I had... information flow within Route County is important, and all. No, it is important. Hence, commissioners and all affected parties should have all of the information. So, right there, I was going to add, take out "and" is important, comma. Hence, commissioners and all affected parties should have all the information that's important to them.
What does that mean? I feel like the way this is worded is a little ambiguous. All of the information that's important to them. So who decides what information is important to who?
And who, yeah, how do we determine who all of the affected parties be?
Yeah, because this could be construed to mean the commissioners need all information always about everything.
Okay, I'm good.
Which seems a little too broad.
I understand your concern.
Yeah, so I don't know how we want to word that.
Well, we just want to make sure everybody has all the same information.
So who's everybody? The three of us?
The three of us and the public. It's in, or that's, that, you know. I didn't come up with the
No, no, I understand. I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. I think we need to decide what we wanted to say. Did you have a suggestion, Tom?
I'm just asking the question, too, trying to get to that information within Ralph County. So speaking to Ralph County organization is important. Hence, and all affected parties.
This is a really terrible sentence.
Yeah. So let's just rewrite it. What do we want it to say?
Or does it need to exist?
Well, it's like Doug said, it's supposed to be everybody having the same information is what you're thinking.
And as much possible as we can get.
Right.
And all the same information. So if you want me to put something like that, I'll...
Yeah, I think the words all affected party and all of the information is placing a pretty high level, a high burden on all.
Like, we need all information about everything that is important to us ever.
And any information we have, we're obligated to give to everybody
all
else.
Affected parties, yeah. So maybe the word all is part of the problem.
Maybe you should say important to commissioners instead of hence. All important, all information is important.
To commissioners.
To commissioners.
I have no idea. I mean, what does that mean, that all information that is important
rather
to
them? Than all, it says information flow within the county is important.
That's a good sentence right there by its period. Information flow within Brown County is important, period. Now what do you want to say?
I'd agree.
That might be enough. Maybe something along the lines, commissioners should work to ensure that they share...
So we're the last ones to get information, so...
The staff should make sure that they all receive information, too, so...
I mean, should it just say something to the effect of commissioners and affected parties should be well-informed about information that is important for their work? Or, I mean, that's a terrible sentence, too, but it's really about just who the information you need, and I think it's trying to also get at who needs that information. I don't know.
Sharing information shall be a priority for commissioners and staff. Right?
I mean, should it could, if we're referring to commissioners specifically.
So why don't we take out flow, too? I'm sorry.
Yeah, flow is unnecessary.
Yeah, so maybe we just go ahead. Pertinent information.
So like I said, sharing. Okay, sharing pertinent information among commissioners and staff shall be a priority.
Should it say something to the effect of in order to make well-informed decisions, relevant information should be shared? I mean, it should be about decision-making, not just we need to know every piece of information or you need, and what makes it important to you. It's not just caring about it.
Sharing information. good decision making relies upon the sharing of relevant information
with all affected parties.
No, not all affected parties. With commissioners and staff.
That's fine with me. I mean, it's a practice standard, right? Okay, read that back, Doug.
In order to make appropriate decisions, information within Rock County is important to the BCC and others, and relevant, and it will be relevantly shared. Pertinent relevation information will be.
We got a lot of words in there.
I'll have to wordsmith it.
You got the idea, though?
I got the idea.
Okay. And we are all in agreement with the idea for the time being?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to number 5, then, which is the old number 5. You inserted a new number 5, so
right. Yeah.
We'll make sure we're talking about the same one. So Doug's new number 5 seems fine.
Give me a second.
Okay.
So individual commissioners may at times wish to send letters of support or opposition. The board agrees that those letters are acceptable if the letter specifically notes the position taken solely attributed to the individual commissioner and that the board's standard letterhead is not utilized for that letter.
Page 5.
I thought we addressed that earlier.
No, we talked about it and added it.
Yeah, I thought we talked about including it in G.
We talked about
G1.
I think we talked about it went in G1, but then Doug added it as a separate.
Okay.
So it becomes G5.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay, now we're on 6, right?
Yeah.
I thought 6 looked good. The only... I did have one comment. B is about coercing and intimidating and interfering, which is fine, but I wondered if we should also add that commissioners should not direct staff without board support. Because it's not just about coercing or intimidating people. I mean, you can nicely tell them to do something that you don't have the authority to tell them to do.
So commissioners should not direct?
Without board support.
So should that... Where it says commissioners, should that say individual commissioners?
Yes, I think so. But, that implies that if the three of us are together coercing or intimidating employees, then it's okay, which would be a no.
Commissioners, and then after that, put in parentheses, individually and collectively, and parentheses.
Well, I think A gets at it, but B is specifically talking about interfering with duties, but really we shouldn't be directing their duties either unless it's coming from the full board. So I don't know what that
is. Yeah, you're right. That's per Doug's earlier comments around negatively addressing these things. There's a big difference between directing and the words coerce, intimidate, or interference.
I mean, I guess A gets at the idea of directing staff, but maybe we should just talk about it in A instead.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The direction's taken care of in A.
Maybe.
B's taking it a step further.
I mean, B's sort of about abuse of power in a certain way. I mean, it's about the
education. I wonder if that even... I mean, there's a part of me that would just cross that out altogether. I mean, it doesn't...
I'm fine with that.
I mean, intentionally coercing, intimidating, and interfering... Do we really need to say that?
I wish we didn't need to say it.
And is it okay to unintentionally coerce, intimidate, and interfere? Yeah, I would take out the word intentionally anyway. And I would also replace the word may with should not. Commissioners should not coerce or intimidate county employees or interfere with their duties or authority.
I actually think should is weaker than may. Yeah. And if you were going to change it, it would be to shall, probably. Because may not means you do not have permission. Should not means you probably shouldn't
do that.
Do it.
Yeah, but that's all we really get to say about this stuff anyway. We can put anything we want down to it here, but we can actually prevent that from happening.
Okay, I don't know that wordsmithing this section is really getting us anywhere.
Okay.
I just didn't know if that idea of an individual commissioner directing staff was fully captured in here or not. Do you guys think it is, or that there's a place to add something to capture that?
Let me work on something.
I think okay. Abe says it pretty explicitly, doesn't it? What's missing in A?
Well, it just doesn't say that idea of commissioners should not direct individual, you know, direct staff members as individuals, right? It doesn't say that anywhere.
It recognizes
the lack
of authority.
Well, we have said earlier, though.
Yeah, okay.
We've said it in the fact that, we act as the board and not individual commissioners.
Yep. That's fine. I'm fine with that. I mean, whether it's stated explicitly or not, I think you're right that it's captured in here, and that's fine with me.
You're right. It's just all about words, that thing.
Yes.
The way it's read kind of says it all.
Okay. Sounds good.
I could live with it the way it's read.
All right. B.
So B, we changed then. So it's commissioners shall not coerce or intimidate
yes.
county employees or interfere with their duties or authority.
That's the limit of the words that thing we did. We had yeah. substituted
Perfect.
Shall.
I'm fine with that.
And took out intentionally.
Right. Yeah, that's just silly.
Yeah.
You do it by accident. So okay, so we're on V5 here. Roman numeral 5. Correct? All right.
I made one little change. So if you...
You're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the role of the county manager, Rouse County has adopted the commission manager form of governance to provide guidelines. I don't know, that's what I'd added for the separate guidelines for the separation. So I don't know...
I don't know that the form of governance provides guidelines. I understand what you're trying to say, but I think that that statement is saying that by having three commissioners and a manager, we are separating administrative and legislative functions, increasing efficiency and supplementing functions of elected officials.
The wordsmithing I would do with that is it doesn't change the meaning. I just, instead of to provide separation of, I would just write the word separate.
To separate administrative and legislative functions, increase efficiency and
yeah.
supplement.
Yeah, I like using one word other than four words to say the same thing. That's all I'm... You don't provide separation. You just separate.
So it's going to... To... Of governance to separate. So we've taken
yes.
out provide to then.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
I don't know anything about A. I assume it's accurate.
Yep. I didn't have any changes there.
All right. B.
So, and I just added a couple words there. So the board, which is ultimately accountable to the citizens, makes policy decisions and establishes county policies and overall county direction. And then,
what did you do there? I'm sorry.
Overall county direction in addition
so right,
to policies.
Yeah, right, where it said county policies, add to that, and overall county direction.
And you're meaning that to reflect the big picture.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
I'm also okay with that.
And then, so then the next change was the, basically, the next to last sentence, the policies, and then I added policies, comma, direction, comma, and goals of the board direct the county
So that second sentence from the last to that. So it just reiterates what we just said, adding direction along with policies.
So get that. I mean, I'm okay with that. I think that's kind of gets into this gray area that we've been dancing around a bit. What some of your concerns have been. So, I mean, I don't know that the I don't know what the addition of that word does. The addition of the word direction. Is that?
Well, I guess it's going to go back to our budget talks and the RASM. We're providing broadside oversight. And, you know, I don't know, this thing works both ways.
The policies, goals, direction, and broad oversight? I don't know.
Direction does strategic direction? Is that where you're headed, or, I mean, direction?
I think we're getting out of the heart of Doug's concerns about how we do business here. This kind of buried right within this sentence. So maybe that rather than trying to wordsmith this sentence, let's talk about that. That issue of that gray area between
policies and administration.
Yeah.
And what I told you, like the last time we met, that's not a finite line. That's a spectrum.
It is.
The difference between policies and administration and direction and the rest. And so.
You're right. I think we're going to really struggle to define that.
I don't disagree. I mean, my blow-up yesterday with a department head goes into the fact that, you know...
What did you do yesterday? I thought you were a good boy yesterday.
No, I lost it about the policies of increased regulatory authority for departments and the rest. Oh. And we need to have a conversation about that.
You're talking about the thing with the UMR deal? Or?
No, no.
Oh, no, you're talking
He's
about,
talking about
Scott.
Environmental health.
I thought you did
a great job. I mean, I thought you expressed that you believe there's a policy decision to be made.
About
there.
How much we're going to be doing regulatory right. things, and that needs to come from us.
Right.
And again, I'm fine with... You know, environmental health providing some direction on that, you know, or maybe his insight on it.
Right.
But it needs to be us funding that and us determining that level of when they start talking about needing to have more staff to run in more, and we need to be discussing that.
But I think that's the way it worked yesterday.
I think that exactly the way that was handled was perfect, which is that you said, I think there's a broader policy discussion that needs to be had in order to make this decision. And we acknowledge that Scott had given us his opinion about the direction we should go.
And I'm all right with that, too.
And I think that is kind of what we need to be thinking about, that we need to determine when there's a bigger picture kind of policy discussion to be had versus these day-to-day decision-making types of things that shouldn't
put
our fingers in.
So it's certainly okay for someone like Scott to bring forward a concept and say, hey, commissioners, this is my suggestion of how we proceed, and we can say,
I'm fine with that, too.
Are you raising your hand?
He's raising his
okay.
hand.
Okay. Well, Doug's talking, and you can be next.
I'll go ahead. I'm just going to say that, you know, I think what Charlie and I think we talked about it even this morning, he and I did, you know, there's a couple policy decisions that do need to be made, and I think he was trying to raise that.
Yeah. And again, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, no, I think you're dead on, though, that there's a policy discussion and then there's administration of that policy, and that's where he's trying to bring forward essentially a policy discussion. And I guess the concern that I've heard from department heads is, or that I observe, actually, that I have for department heads or of department heads' behavior is that they don't always bring up policy discussions. They're afraid to bring up policy discussions.
and, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, Scott's reacting to the idea that they said yesterday that we're being asked by the state to do more. And that's...
Screw the state.
I know.
I'm not going to tell you. Tell him to tell him to screw
the but that's, but he's getting that pressure from administrative
staff. I understand that. And we need to push back.
I know you. And that's the part where I think
especially
they
them.
Need to hear that. And also, that's a policy decision of where is the line, right? You know, what is the philosophy? What are we trying to accomplish? And what he had done, which is the other piece, is the fee recovery analysis. And the question, are we subsidizing or are we not?
I agree. And so yeah. Somehow, then, that's been our conversation that we've had, well, it's even during Tom's review during the last time, is how do we get these forward-looking conversations out here on the table and talking about them versus this bullshit of updates and what the hell we hope they've been goddamn working and doing their job. So, and you know, and again, we ought to be able to, with Scott, there's four things on there that just blow my mind up. And we need to talk about them one at a time amongst the three of us. And if we're supportive of it, we tell him to move forward on it.
But we're not, it wasn't inappropriate for him to bring those forward, was it?
No, I don't. But they've been on his list for the last 4 months.
But I
mean, the inspections for the inspections, the double inspections by county employees. For
separate.
Instance, separate, you know. So we just need to have those conversations amongst us. He can make his argument for him. We need to schedule a half hour for that discussion there.
Yeah, but you can't leave him feeling like he's a toad for bringing that stuff forward.
I understand that, but we need to figure out how we can not have it on his list, that it's on his update list and that he's working forward on it.
Well, and I think that, I think also to this point, and maybe really what is happening is the way that this is happening, which is somebody like Scott has to be brave enough to come in here and bring it up, right? Is there a better way that we could have these things come forward, and what would that look like? Because I think you're right. The updates are kind of, here's what I did in the last month, and here's a list of 75 things I did last month. Okay?
Scott's list. Yep. You're going to get 75.
Some of them have 10, right? But it's still that kind of, here's what I've done. And we're not having those forward-moving policy discussions. And I think that may also be at the heart of where your frustration comes in these things are happening without us having the ability to have discussion.
Yeah, they're just kind of happening in that background. They're just continue to move forward. So they're happening, in my mind.
They're not presented as policy questions.
I would tell you staff feels the same way, you know, that they're waiting for direction.
I'm agreeing totally.
Yeah.
Throw one on the table. Let's get it on or off the table and get it removed.
Yeah. So who of the five of us, and I'm going to guess that these two probably have more ideas than the three of us, but maybe I'm wrong. What does that look like? How did we do it differently than what we're doing right now to make it
Monday, more? You bring up the topics. You know, you spend Monday on topics, not on updates.
Who brings the topics forward?
Staff can bring it forward, and you can pass them down. They ought to be bi-directional.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it should be bi-directional or whatever, you know, but I think also the idea of, I guess what I'm used to the city structure, not a county structure, so maybe it's different, but the idea of having an
agenda. They give them cities a lot more.
An agenda planning process where, you know, we have a calendar. You know, we have a 6-month calendar of what's coming forward and what do we want to see that rolls. And that is topical. And so it's essentially saying, okay, in the next 6 months, Department Head A says, you know, we're going to have a on-site waiver. Department B says we're going to have staffing, you know, sheriff staffing issues, you know, all those things are on that list. And then someone or all of you decide what comes forward.
The other thing is we're not getting any public input on any of these things that are big policy discussions. I mean, having a transfer of an on-site waste, ISDS, water,
OWTS.
OWTS transfer system, we need to get that on the table, and we need to throw it out there. If we're going to do something like that, we need to make sure the public has the ability to weigh in on that thing.
One way to do it is to agendize it and say we're going to have a discussion.
Public hearing.
about on-site wastewater systems. But you're right. You put that on the agenda, and but that'd be great. People come in and yell at us, and we don't do it.
We shouldn't be doing it without the public having the opportunity.
I agree. But for right now, we're keep leaving Scott out there in the lurch and says, "Well, state wants me to continue implementing this thing," I understand. I have an environmental science, and you have a daughter, and you have an attorney. I mean, that's what they get schooled in, is that stuff. They love it. You know, so they're more sensitive than the rest. And so we're not having that broader perspective of the other side of the situation. And, you know, even Scott's comments the other day, yesterday when we talked about, you know, the Saddleback thing, you know, on one hand, he said, well, it was a natural event that happened that caused this thing. But then at the same point in time, he turns around and says, well, if we'd had more inspectors there, we'd have known that the permit was overstated and that we really didn't have a valid permit. So maybe we could have solved that. I don't know.
I think it's two different issues.
Yeah.
But I think without getting into specifics, I mean, these are good examples of where we should be doing a better job of having the type of discussion that needs to be had. I think a lot of what's being brought forward in these updates is the kind of stuff that, well, first of all, we could literally just get their list in an email and read it, and then we could have discussion about more robust.
And then just ask us a few questions, and then have more real
So let's take that back. Maybe that's a pretty good example that you picked on the OWTS systems. So it feels appropriate that staff would bring forward this concern, say, hey, you know, from our perspective, environmental health, and from what the state is telling us, this is something that I, staff member, think you, commissioners, ought to consider. And then at that particular point in time, we should either make the decision, no, we're not going to consider it, done, or B, yeah, we're going to consider it, let's put it on the agenda on a Tuesday item for discussion, discussion only, no decision to be made at that meeting.
And I think there's a middle ground. You do a Monday. I mean, that's the purpose, in my mind, that's the purpose of work sessions, is let's work through
this. Have a
discussion. Maybe there are multiple perspectives. Maybe, you know, right now it's meant to be Mondays or staff, but maybe it's
open it up to public.
And have that, you know, who should be at the table, both sides or, you know, multiple perspectives, experts, you know, if there are experts on whatever issue. And you evaluate the issue for, you know, essentially an hour or, you know, 2 hours even, right? You know, you have a background, you have, you know, the issues for discussion, you work through the issues in enough time, and then you move on to, if there's a decision to be made Tuesday, and not the next Tuesday, but, I mean,
scheduled on future adoption. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Let's all talk at the same time.
Appreciate this.
Well, and I think I appreciate Dan's concept of this agenda setting as more of a what that looks like, and that staff could say, here's some things that I want to ask the commissioners for us to have a discussion on, and there's still a decision about whether we want to consider those things or not. And again, I don't know if it's a city thing or not. I don't really care. But I've observed is that you believe it's not specific to cities?
No, it's not.
Okay. That, you know, there's discussion about the agenda during a meeting. So here's the agenda for September 4th.
Yeah.
And we can have some discussion about what's on that agenda. Do you want to add anything to that agenda? Do you want to? And that's during the public the regular meeting time that happens. I think there also often is a role for the mayor or the chair in working with staff and having a responsibility around managing some of that.
The agenda.
And forward looking, not just what's on the agenda next week, but what's on the agenda for the next 6 months in terms of these types of conversations. And so I wonder if there's a place to go there that could work better than the way that these things are being brought up now.
Well, let's use Chad's presentation as an example. While
which one?
The one yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Yesterday's presentation. Okay. While I originally agreed that his list was a step in the right direction. That actually seems like a real example of us climbing down into a set of weeds that maybe we just didn't belong in.
And then it was kind of struggling too, because it might be listed three different places. You know,
it was a better list.
No, it was a better list.
It was the whole thing. And so, I mean, that's another interesting question. Looking at Chad's thing, while I have a great deal of interest in his enforcement things that are going on, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe it's just like none of my business at a certain point. Do I really need to know about the status of 17 different enforcement issues? I don't know.
Well, or alternatively, maybe that list is valuable.
I think you do.
Maybe that list is valuable, but I got just as much information from what he emailed to us as what he talked to us about, right? I mean, there's a place for
So are you suggesting that he sends us the email list and then we lead the conversation when he comes up here? Jen, just sit there.
No, I actually don't think so. I would suggest that he sends us the list, and if we have specific questions, he has a supervisor who is responsible for having discussions about those.
I mean, we can be the conduit between, you know, for questions.
In terms of day-to-day.
You know, obviously, you can do that yourself, but I mean, that kind of thing can happen offline to a certain degree, I would think. I mean,
doesn't have to be in a public
session.
You're
not making decisions, I would think. At least, you know,
we shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, it's informational. You know, your questions, your curiosity, usually, right? And if it should be on his list and he's not aware, that would be a conversation, maybe, those kinds of things. But to me, that doesn't need to be agendized. What should be agendized is maybe the discussions around, you know, the master plan, like what are you doing and where
yes.
are we going, right?
Yes.
You know, and let's talk about these big things and where are we, and that comes through in
process type questions on direction.
Yeah, it comes through in a monthly maybe bite of, okay, this month we're going to work through, you know, step by step, and you then know that something's happening on these big projects. And there's movement, and if there's a decision point that he needs your thought on, so be it. But if you can use that as an update of just here's what we went and did two meetings in the public, here's what we heard, you know, all that kind of concept. I mean, that then puts it on the record on if it's a Tuesday, you know, for some level of discussion that is recorded, and other people in the community can say, I don't agree with that at the next meeting if that's the case, right? You know, and maybe it gets people involved in a process that we want them involved in.
Well, we could do it on a Monday, and we could just change our policy here. Just go on the recording and go live on Mondays with our work sessions.
Yeah. It really, I mean, it depends.
It doesn't really
more. I would think it more depends on whether it's topical, you know, useful to the public, and I would think they would want to know what's happening in our operations.
And I think that what it feels like is that we're spending a lot of time on things that are really just so that we're well-informed about what's going on in the county, and that's important for us to be well-informed, but we could probably use our time for things that are more productive and get that information in a more efficient way.
I go back to my, let's work on future direction.
Yeah.
And specifically on the master plan, just like you said. You know, and are we going to defer the master plan planning to the planning department, or are we going to this ad hoc committee, or do we want to drive it, or are we going to allow? I'm worried about, and or should we be having conversation about all that as well here? Because I'm worried about letting planning commission drive it. I'm worried about letting planning drive it. I'm comfortable with, but we need to have that conversation. I'm more comfortable with having this ad hoc committee driving the process. Somebody needs to figure out how to drive that process, and I don't feel real comfortable. I mean, they're still going to be the primary, but I'm still trying to get, we need to be talking about during our Monday's work sessions about future-oriented thing and policy direction, policies and or direction for these departments.
I mean, thinking about the master plan, you know, you have a meeting maybe on, let's talk about the engagement plan. That's what we're going to do for the next 6 months. Let's talk about what we plan to do. Does that make sense to you? Are there suggestions? You know, how do we amend it? Final. Okay. Now let's talk to you about how we're doing the engagement, right? And we're hearing. and some topics that maybe have come up, and you know, some of that sort of thing. And then, you know, spend a meeting on affirming the vision, or you know, all of those kinds of things. Like, as we're going forward, let's have a meeting on transportation. That seems to be a topic. Have wildlife. You know, I mean, you can use those updates in a manner that helps you be involved in the process and set some policy direction, and you know, move it forward so that there are milestones for our staff that make sure that it's getting done, right? You know, it's not sort of this come back in 6 months or in a year when you finally come up with something, and then you spent a year's worth of time for something that hasn't gotten input at appropriate times to improve it.
So, visualize for me Chad's next update to us.
Well, it depends on the topic, honestly, but I guess I would say, suggest master plan engagement plan, and that it, here is the plan. We've had this ad hoc discussion about it, maybe two, and you know, it's prepared to the point where we think it's at least a final draft, and we want to finalize it. So let's have your opinions.
So instead of having on the Monday work session agenda update from the planning director, it would say discussion of master plan process.
Yeah, right. Public engagement process.
Yeah. I'm fine with that.
I think this is a good direction. I mean, I think we want to make sure that, I know that it's important, I think, especially to Doug, to be really well informed about the things that are happening in the county, and we want to make sure there's an opportunity to do that, but that shouldn't be the majority of our time. It should be forward-looking to what's going to be happening so that we can have input and make policy decisions around those.
And so maybe that agenda, let's just say next time we could have a 30-minute agenda item says discussion of the master plan process, and then maybe after that agendize 15 minutes for miscellaneous questions of the commissioners, of the planning director.
Well,
and then presumably what we would have gotten and read is updated, right? There might be two or three items that we really want to talk about.
Yeah.
I think the other way to, and I know this won't always work, but utilizing, I mean, most of those questions I would think would be things that we should be able to ask Tom Dan as his supervisor, and if Dan doesn't know the answer, he should be able to get the answer from him for us.
Or at least prompt the answer, maybe in the presentation or in the discussion, you know, like the day before, hey Chad, we've got five questions, be prepared to include that discussion in your overall presentation. I mean, I would suggest that rather than adding time, you know, you're essentially saying, here's a 2-hour item, you know, and whatever.
We're going to spend an hour and a half discussing the master plan update,
including
probably 30 minutes on the other miscellaneous
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm with you, Doug, I think in the sense I don't love the idea that it's an hour, that's it, stop talking, right? Like, we've got to move on. But I think that's the method is, you know, you may have some flex in there to say, look, we think there's half hour worth of discussion, or maybe there's, you know, you're anticipating public input, right? So there's going to be people who want to talk about it, and so there's going to be people, just, you know, 5 minutes each, you know, whatever it looks like, and you budget the time that's expected for the conversation. That's how you do it, and it'll take some time to figure that out. And the other issue, though, is, you know, you've got this normal cycle of monthly contact, right? You know, so you've got staff is used to the idea that they come in once and that's it. They kind of try and get it all done, right? And then they come back the next month and they keep moving down the list, hopefully, or, you know, patching through the same stuff. You're likely to have, if you open it up, you're going to have some people who don't come in at all, and you're going to have to make them come in, or, you know, provide some. We're going to have to work with them, I think, to figure out what rises to the level where it needs to be discussed here. And some will come in all the time, right? You know, because that's like the Scots of the world. They think that everything needs to, you know, is at that level where it needs to move forward through, you know, this policy, or they've got all these great ideas. And that's where I think, you know, the chair is helping to manage traffic. You know, you're essentially saying, well, where is, you know, so-and-so department? We need to hear from them, and I want to hear about this, or you all have decided we want to hear about that. But you may have to pull people in. You're not always going to have them knocking on the door. That would just be my suggestion.
Yeah, take IS, for instance.
Exactly.
How much interest do we actually have? We want to know that the computers are running. And the
actually, his update, you know, really...
It's really good.
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of other ones.
I mean, we actually could ask a couple, and he was forward thinking, and you know, and forward talking, and the rest.
I thought he did a great job. But you're right, Tim, that he might not have an issue or specific
it's
topic
a policy
for
issue.
But
it's
cybersecurity.
That really is just an update.
Cybersecurity might be something
in
that world.
How often do we want to update our computers, and you know, what should that look like? I mean, you know, I don't know.
To that point, we could still continue to have a department head scheduled to come in routinely every month, but their focus has to change, you know, to these forward-looking, you know,
policy-related issues.
Policy-related and maybe, you know, important information.
I might push on that a little bit to say you have to have something that's in this realm once a month, and you're going to come in and come up and have something versus we need to know what it is. And if it's topical, you may have various departments involved. So I think I would push us to be a little more flexible in our thinking about that, but noting that there may be some departments where just a regular update is more appropriate because of the nature of the work that they're doing.
And it's forward thinking doesn't mean that you have to be totally blowing up the whole street to be forward. When that was the thing that killed me with proactivity and the word in there. So, you know, it's like, so that means you have to change things to be forward moving? No, sometimes things are just pretty damn good the way they are. In fact, so
this is a great conversation. I don't think it has anything to do with what we were
I think it gets more at the heart of why we're having this discussion, though. I mean, it's about process, and it's about making sure that the appropriate roles are being recognized.
And also going back to the updates from the department heads, that's probably up to us to enforce, which is, how does what you're talking about today relate to our strategic plan? You know, what is it that your department is doing that fits into that, right?
I think so. So noting that you want to go to your hayfield, and we're pushing on our time here, what do we want to do here? I would suggest that we request, it sounds like, I have faith that Dan has a good picture of what this might look like. I don't know if you guys would want to ask Dan to propose something to us that we could consider in terms of what this structure might look like from department heads that we could give some feedback on.
I'm good with that.
But does any of that actually belong in a governance policy?
Probably not.
Okay.
But it's more a process question. It's clarifying. I think, though, that it's processes that support what we are saying.
I totally agree with all that. And if I have a better understanding, we all have a better common understanding of each one of the rest of our roles. You know, the rest of this, you know, ends up being worse.
So there's no reason that we're under pressure to finish this today, or schedule something for next week?
Well, the fact is, let's just table it until we get it on the agenda again.
Yes. Let's do that.
Oh, we have a decision point again today.
Yeah, we still have to.
Oh, okay. We're going to keep tabling it.
Okay, that's good.
Kicking
the can down the road, I'm good with that.
We're not kicking the can, we're working.
Okay.
Well, actually, I don't know if you look at the agenda, we really actually didn't. So we did table
it. Oh, it's
last
a work
week.
Session this time.
And we didn't table it to today.
Yes, we did.
Oh, we did.
Table
yes.
Today.
Okay. We did.
So we should table it again.
I think so. But
and can we table it? Can we just say we're going to table it until we've finalized what we would like to. I mean, I
really
we continue to have
the conversation.
I do too.
Do you want to get discussion in 2 weeks again?
I think that we should try to get it done, but if there's not time,
no, it's not that big of a deal to table it to next week. Put it back on the agenda again.
Let's just put the work session on next week.
Okay.
It's still going to take another week to get it finished after we have another work session.
Right. We're still
to get it in complete form.
So, Madam Chair, I would.
So, wait, we've got to get.
Oh, I forgot.
So I guess she is probably recording it, so, and we're on.
I don't forget.
Okay.
I'm not worried. Are you guys worried?
Madam Chair, I would move that we table discussion and any decisions around our policy governance conversation until next week's work session on Monday.
Or Tuesday, wherever there's time on the agenda, if that's all right with you guys.
Yeah, Tuesday, yeah.
Actually, it should be on Tuesday.
Yeah, next week.
Because it's a big Tuesday.
Until
next Tuesday.
Second.
Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 I'm out.
Thanks, guys.
But I got the same thing.
I am not going to do that. Hey, I